Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I have a number of people from whom I get policy. I'm talking to Frank Gaffney. I talked to Richard Haass.
And Richard Haass served under Colin Powell during this Bush administration over at the State Department. He's now the president of the Council on Foreign Relations.
The idea of a one world community, a new world order. You know, they see that.
They see themselves as a government as opposed to a group of world leaders or people with influence at a global level who are talking about global issues, do they?
They see themselves as headhunters. They'll get an up and coming politician who they think may be president or prime minister one day, and as globalist industrialist leaders who believe that politics shouldn't be in the hands of the politicians.
People talk to me about, you know, the issue of Republican versus Democrat as if they don't get it. And I say, look, here's the way you get it. It's organized crime. All you do is you call the Republicans the Genoveses and you call the Democrats the Gambinos. The people at the top, they treat it like a crap game, like it's their crap game, like they're making lots of money. Occasionally somebody at the table shoots each other, but the moment anything threatens their crap game, they all unite to protect it. They're both controlled by the same financial, economic, and corporate interests.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order.
It used to be more secretive. You know, the New World Order was talked about 30 or 40 years ago, and nobody would say it out and open. Now they talk about the New World Order, or they just think the world would be better off if we had one world government.
Right.
I don't. I mean, I don't even like the size of our federal government, let alone one world government.
It's a need for a new world order.
Within the next 4 years, we will see the emergence of a new international
The beginning of a new international order.
But there's a very, very clear-cut and easily identifiable system in place that puts all of these elements, from media control to government control to energy control, together into one apparatus working together effectively towards its final goal, which is, you know, global control.
A new world is emerging. It is a new world order.
It's a phrase that I often use myself, that we needed a new world order.
There is a chance for the President of the United States to use this disaster to carry out what his father, a phrase his father used, and that is a new world order.
They're inside a cabal, a conspiracy, if you will, to take control of the United States, lead us into a one world government run by them.
Americans have been taught to expect their salvation from government, instead of recognizing government as the most dangerous threat they'll face in their lives.
Well, let's see here.
That's right. We're very glad you could tune in today. This is the podcast for Christians United for God and Country and the United States Prayer Force. And like we try to say at the beginning of the program, we want to let you know what we're all about. We're trying to gather Christians together to pray for America. If you're a Christian of any shape or size, we'd love for you to join us. And we've got a lot of things to pray about. We've got a prayer list here, too, that we'd love to send you. It's the major prayer points that we're focusing on. And, you know, it's, the Bible says wherever two or three are gathered in the name of Jesus that, you know, good things can happen. The faithful prayers of righteous men will avail much. You know, I'm not quoting it precisely, I know, but we have a pastor here who can straighten me out in a minute with some of the scriptures. But we want you to know that we're here, and we want you to join us in prayer. We want to touch base on a couple of issues. The pastor has some interesting things to say about our American government and some of the great documents and some of the great men who founded this country and things they had to say. And that'll be coming up in just a moment. Right now, I want to give you some really good, strong reasons to pray for America, like you need them, right? One of the major ones right now is law and order in this country. Law and order in this country has devolved into chaos. And I think, you know, if you just listen to the news, you'll hear more and more crime reports coming through the media than we've probably heard in a long time. Like even today, this very day, this is Saturday, March 16th, 2024, in Falls Township, Pennsylvania, multiple people have been shot. A carjacking has taken place. And there is a shelter-in-place order that's in effect right now as an active shooter is on the loose in that Pennsylvania town. Some deaths have occurred. We don't have the exact numbers, so we're not going to say what those are at this time. But that's what's going on in Pennsylvania. And as you know, in New York City right now, the governor, Kathy Hochul, has called the National Guard to be deployed in the subway system of New York City due to the significant increase in subway shootings, robberies, and violence. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's a good thing. But if you remember, go back a year or two, and do you remember the Democrats crying out for defunding the police? Well, a lot of cities did that. A lot of cities took some of the money away from their police departments, and who knows where that money went.
New York City being one of them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think they were talking about, well, we want to hire more social workers. Can you imagine a social worker approaching an active shooter and saying, hey there, young fella, that's a pretty nice gun you have there. Can we talk? And I don't think so. I don't think it's going to work. So the National Guard is standing guard in the subway system of New York City. Law and order has really fallen apart. So the defund the police movement obviously was poorly conceived. It was a bad idea from the beginning. We knew it was when it was first mentioned. And those politicians who cried out for that to happen should look at themselves in the mirror and perhaps consider resignation, because it was foolish nonsense to defund the police. Right now, the police should be strengthened. And, you know, we do understand that there are several situations where police officers have acted inappropriately. They've done things across the line, if you will, and we know that happens. But that doesn't mean you defund the entire force and render your community helpless in situations where emergencies and violence and threats of gun violence can occur. Another issue we want to talk about briefly is the southern border. What's going on at the southern border is well known by everybody in the news. But one person in particular brought some of the important issues to light, and that is FBI Director Christopher Wray. He told a Senate panel recently that dangerous individuals have entered the United States illegally at the southern border. He says, we have had dangerous individuals entering the United States. He said these words at an annual worldwide threats congressional hearing at which the heads of U.S. intelligence agencies testify. Wray said, we're seeing a wide array of very dangerous threats that emanate from the border, he said, citing drug trafficking in particular. The FBI alone seized enough fentanyl in the last 2 years to kill 270 million people, he said. So that's a really good reason to pray for America. And we pray that you will join us to pray for America on the issue of law and order and on the southern border, where law and order does not exist either. Now, we look back a little bit and we say, did Donald Trump have the border secured when he was in office? Well, technically, Donald Trump did not shut down the border when he was in office, but according to Representative Chip Roy of Texas, here's what he said. He said, what did happen was that the administration, led by President Trump, led by people who believe in America, led by strong leaders at the Department of Homeland Security at that time, they worked to secure the border. They worked to get those numbers down, he said. They worked to force Mexico to hold people in place with the migrant protection protocols. So the border was safer under Donald Trump. He had instituted a number of policies and things to secure the border. And then, if you remember, when Joe Biden took office, he completely eradicated everything that Donald Trump had done. The border became wide open, and then they started flowing in by the millions. You know, we look at ourselves in the mirror and say, what's going on in this country? And what can we do to fight back? Well, we believe the strongest thing that we can do is we can pray for this country. We can bring a lot to bear if we will join together as Christians and pray. And that's why we're offering you this prayer list to help join us in prayer. One of the things that's number one on our list, on this prayer list, is revival in this country. We want revival in our own hearts and lives. We want revival in our families and our churches. And we want revival in America, all across the nation. We're praying that America would turn to God. And that's just prayer point number one. Send us an email at ChristiansUnited50 at gmail.com, and we will send you this list of prayer points. And we want you to pray with us. Law and order and the southern border, they're all in a mess down there. And Pastor, we got one last thing that's very interesting. You know Robert F. Kennedy Jr. seems to be a very good man. He is in the process of selecting his vice presidential running mates. And at the top of his list in the news are former Green Bay Packers quarterback and current New York Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers, and also World Wrestling Federation Hall of Fame wrestler Jesse Ventura. He's also the former governor of Minnesota. So what does that say about our elections to you, Pastor? It says to me that we don't really have elections looking for the best people. These are good people. I'm not saying they're bad people, but these are not necessarily the best people to lead the country. And it's now become a popularity conference like contest like you're in high school. Vote for the most popular individuals to lead the class. Yeah? So welcome to America. Pray for America. Pastor is going to talk to us now about some things. And Pastor, what you got for us?
Well, the first thing I want to speak about, I want to start out speaking about democracy. And one of the things that you're hearing from President Biden and his administration is that if you elect Donald Trump to be the next president, 47th president of the United States, that he will destroy democracy. So I want to start out by giving you a definition of what democracy is, and this definition comes from Webster's 1828 dictionary, and here's what it says. Democracy is this, a form of government in which the supreme power is lodged in the hands of the people collectively. You'll recall that during the time of the Civil War, there was that great conflict there at Gettysburg, and when that conflict, that battle had subsided, and that ground was being dedicated as, you know, mm-hmm. hallowed ground regarding all the men that died there during that battle. Abraham Lincoln made his famous Gettysburg Address, and he ended his speech with these words, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. And so that, in essence, is what democracy is. Democracy is when you're putting the supreme power of government in the hands of the people collectively. Now, in a democracy, a real democracy, all right, the people meet and exercise the government in person, meaning this. You know, an illustration that I might think of is maybe a church business meeting, where you have the members of the congregation assembled together for the express purpose of making a decision, and then, you know, the situation is discussed and set forth, and then right there and then, okay, they take a vote on whether they're going to go forward with this, you know, proposal or they're not.
Right.
Okay, but that's what a democracy is, all right? It's not only putting the power in the hands of the people, but it's when the people meet and exercise government in person in a situation such as that. Our government is a democratic republic, meaning, all right, in a republic, the people assemble and administer it by representatives and elected officials. So, yes, the power collectively is in the hands of the people, but they elect officials, in our case, you know, to the House of Representatives or to the Senate, to represent us, to do the will of the people when those bodies assemble together to discuss matters, make laws, and then ultimately bring them to a vote. Now, living in a democracy does not mean that an individual has the right or liberty to do anything that they feel is right if it violates natural law. See, we're living in a day and time, and when, you know, people think, okay, if I'm free and I'm living in a democracy, I can do anything that I want to do, in essence, if it maybe doesn't hurt somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. I'll say that again. All right? Living in a democracy is the right in regard to the individual, all right, to do what he has liberty to do if it does not violate natural law. And natural law are those laws that God ordained, and those laws are found in Scripture. Oh, that's natural law. All right, for instance, when we've quoted from the Declaration of Independence before, but I'll read the second paragraph again here. It says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles. Now, you see, we understand that under these natural laws, which are, as is already stated, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, these are given to us by God, and it's the purpose of government, all right, to secure these freedoms and these liberties that are given to us by God so that we can live accordingly.
Right.
All right, now, so if it goes against the law of God, God's natural laws that he's ordained, then you don't have the right to do it.
Right.
You see? Anyways, we're living in a time when elected leaders, all right, in regard to our government, are violating the principles upon which, you know, our nation was founded. Now, in paragraph one, I want to read to you paragraph one from the Constitution. And here's what paragraph one in regard to the Constitution says. We the people, you see, deriving its power from the people. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, and provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and to secure the blessings of liberty in ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. So these principles upon which this country were founded were, first of all, declared in the Declaration of Independence,
right.
And then the purpose of the Constitution was to ensure that we have the rights, all right, that God has given to supposedly to every individual so that we can live, you know, as the Constitution says, you know, to do all those things, establish justice, domestic tranquility, so forth and
sure.
So on. Now, I want you to consider those couple of words that were found in that paragraph. And those words were establish justice. The word justice has the idea of impartiality or equal treatment under the law. And really, all right, that word establish justice, which we're saying means impartiality or equal treatment under the law, is synonymous with the word equity. But like so many times, words that were used in the past, all right, no longer have the same definition or meaning as they do now in the present. Mm-hmm. All right, in regard to equity, you hear a lot of that, spoke about that, you know, DEI, you know, in regard to, you know, treatment of people, so forth and so on, and the E stands for equity. Equity today means that everybody has to start at the same place in life.
Mm-hmm.
That's the mindset today. And if someone can't start at the same place in life as another individual, that person has to have, excuse me, opportunities given to them so that, you know, they can function and start
sure.
At that very same place. That's not what equity is all about. All right. Equity means giving to every man, all right, impartiality in regard to what is due him under the law. And so you have the word justice. The word justice and the word judgment are two words, all right, that go together. Justice and judgment, or judgment and justice. And those are Bible words. For instance, the first time you find those two words together in the scripture is in Genesis chapter 18, verse number 19, where God was speaking to Abraham, and he says this, "For I know him," God knowing Abraham. He says that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. Another time that you find in regard to those two words, justice and judgment, is found in the book of 2 Samuel chapter 8 and verse number 15. And here's talking about David. David as king over the people of God, the nation of Israel. The Bible says in 2 Samuel chapter 8, verse number 15, "And David reigned over all Israel, and David executed judgment and justice unto all people." And you'll find those very same words also in the book of 1 Chronicles chapter 8, verse number 14. Now, John Jay, who was the first chief justice of the Supreme Court, and as we said on previous, you know, podcasts, he was also a Bible-believing, born-again Christian, said this in regard to the words, that word justice. "Justice is indiscriminately due to all without regard to numbers, wealth, or rank." Thomas Jefferson made this quote. "It is better to toss up, it is better to toss up cross and pile." Now, you might not understand that terminology. What Thomas Jefferson was referring to as toss and pile, that's the same way as you and I talking about flipping a coin and calling heads or tails.
Okay.
So he says it's better to toss up a pile, heads or tails, in a cause than refer it to a judge who is warped by any motive whatever. And that's exactly what you have going on in the justice system in America today.
It's become politicized.
It is politicized.
People have their own agendas, and even the judges, they're not executing or bringing forth justice. They're bringing forth their agenda by making unjust decisions.
Okay, and that's why so oftentimes when you see some of the things that are going on and people making comment about things going on, they talk about a two-tiered justice system. In other words, it's not impartial, okay? It's not fair. It's not balanced, okay? And when an individual maybe gets accused of a crime and is on trial for that crime he supposedly he or she might have committed, you don't have any certainty that when you go and stand in front of a court, all right, whether it be a judge or, whether it be, you're going to be tried by a jury,
mm-hmm.
that you're going to receive a fair trial.
Right.
All right. Regarding equity. They're going to look upon you and maybe in regard to who you are, what you are, and then render a verdict based on not what's true and not what's honest and not what is equitable.
Sure.
But upon, a political persuasion. And so, like we said, just like you just said a moment ago, if a person's charged with a crime, it depends on the political, views of the judge or whomever presiding over the case on how the individual on trial will be treated. You know, if the judge is of a liberal persuasion and the person is accused of the crime has an opposite ideology of the judge, that person may not receive a fair trial.
Right.
Or a verdict, you've seen that going on.
All right. I wanted to get that out there, to whoever's listening, especially to John Doe. Very important message right there, because we've debated so many times, and to all the other eggheads out there that just want to continue to forget this many things that we go over what a republic is and what the law is and the only way it's going to be fixed. Okay? So I just want to make sure that's clear. All right, again, with this, I can do whatever I want. And I remember Sarge going hours with John Doe, round and route. And then John Doe started with, you're a prostitute and this and that, and you're pimping yourself, and because you don't bring his grievances to, no. That's not what the Constitution and the Bill of Rights mean. That's not what it stands for. That's not what it means, okay? We take the words of yesterday and apply today's meaning to them. No, you can't do that. Okay? So that was very explained. That was explained in 14 minutes, very, very clearly, clear, so that you could not possibly get it wrong. There's no debating. Doesn't matter what you believe. Doesn't matter what you want to believe. It is what it is. It's a fact. That's what it is. It is what it is. It means what it is. It means what it says. It says what it means. There's no interpretation to it. Okay. Go over now another hairy subject here that we constantly get over, the Reconstruction that we're constantly arguing. Because look, this is the bottom line, folks. Bottom line is this. Okay. If you want to fix America and you want to fix our republic, there is a certain way of going about it. And you're only going to fix it through one certain way. Simple as that. You can get as popular as you want on social media. You guys see you people out there, you go right ahead. And you can listen. That doesn't mean nothing in the end. Justice and judgment will come. All right, let's see. Civil War. Very interesting. Very smart man right here. I've had him on my show about 10 years ago. Very smart man from America's Remedy. He's going to talk about the Civil War right now. It's only 13 minutes long. I know people don't have 13 minutes because they're running around, their dumb phones are going off, and you know. But we're going to explain the truth here. Nothing. So North Carolinians, these slaveholders, these wicked, vile people who left the Union, waged war with the federal government so we could preserve the institution of slavery. Nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing. There was slavery, the way we think it happened. Many people don't realize that the object of the war is accessible as an official record. As we read here in this video, the object of the war has passed by the United States Senate on July 25th, 1861, we noticed that the object was not to interfere with the institution of slavery, nor was it for the oppression, conquest, or subjugation, to overthrow state rights. It was, however, stated for the purpose of preserving the Union and maintaining the Constitution. Let's go into this here.
Okay, here we go. Civil War. How many people here know what the object of the Civil War was? Anybody who's heard me, I know, knows it. But isn't the object of a war pretty important? So you know, what's the objective? What are we going to do here? What are we trying to achieve? What's our goal here? Well, they actually had one. And this is Andrew Johnson of Tennessee. He was a senator from Tennessee at the time. And who is this guy? Later president of the United States. He was a vice president under Lincoln. And think about that. He was a Democrat. Lincoln was a Republican. Lincoln ran with a Democrat as his vice president candidate. Just think about how times have changed. But here's the thing I'm going to put it in a – it's actually in the Congressional Globe. Passed in the Senate July 25th, 1861, that this war is not prosecuted upon our part in any spirit of oppression, nor for any purpose of conquest or subjugation. Remember those two words. It's not for any purpose of conquest or subjugation, nor for the purpose of overthrowing or interfering with the rights or established institutions of the states, but to defend and maintain the supremacy of the Constitution and all laws made pursuant thereof, and to preserve the Union with all the dignity, equality, and rights of the several states unimpaired, that as soon as these objects are accomplished, the war ought to cease. Let's break that down. The object of the war was not for oppression, not for any purpose of conquest, not for any purpose of subjugation, not for the purpose of overthrowing or interfering with the rights of those states. It was not for the purpose of overthrowing or interfering with the established institutions of the states, slavery. How many people were taught here that the object of the Civil War, the official object of the Civil War passed in Congress, was not to interfere with the institution of slavery? How many people are taught that? Got one. And let me think here. I bet you don't go to public school. Some things they said it was. To defend and maintain the supremacy of the Constitution and all laws made in pursuance thereof. To preserve the Union with all the dignity of the several states unimpaired. To preserve the Union with all the equality of the several states unimpaired. And to preserve the Union with all the rights of the several states unimpaired. Was this what the object of the war actually proved out to be? No. Was this what it proved not to be? Not to interfere with states' rights. Not to maintain the Constitution. Was the Constitution maintained under this? No, it was absolutely destroyed by Lincoln and the 39th Congress. And it was to depopulate the southern states and people them over again. Now, when they're talking about depopulating the southern states, I'm going to explain that because we're going to actually read these words. Are they talking about just getting rid of all the people and killing all the people? Or are they talking about changing the body politic? They're going to depopulate the southern states of one body politic and people them over with another body politic loyal to Washington. But let's read these words. This is John Sherman, Senator from Ohio. This is in the floor debate on the object of the war. Okay? And this is said by Mr. Breckinridge right here. You read Mr. Breckinridge of Kentucky, Senator Breckinridge. He's actually quoting a part of the object of the war we just read, and he makes a comment. He says, I think, sir, that this war is prosecuted according to the purposes of a majority of those who are managing the legislation that leads to its prosecution or object of subjugation. Now, this is being said by a United States Senator, John Breckinridge. He knows what's being said. He knows the feelings and passions of what's going on. He says, I believe that unless those states which have seceded from the federal union lay down their arms and surrender at discretion, the majority in Congress will hear to no terms of settlement, and that those who may attempt to mediate will speak to the winds. Or Fort Sumter, Congress would not listen to any peace conference coming from the South. They turn them away. Before the war started, this is before Fort Sumter, we're not talking peace to you. We're not talking to you. No intention. That was from the North. And right here he says they'll mediate to the winds. I believe, therefore, that the war, in the sense and spirit entertained by these gentlemen, is a war of subjugation. The eminent senator from Ohio, Mr. Sherman, not less conservative than a majority of the organization with which he is connected, went so far in the warmth of his feelings the other day as to declare that unless the people of certain states of the South yielded willing obedience, he would depopulate them and people them over again. That I call not only a war of subjugation, but a war of extermination. July 25th, 1861. This is not post-war. This is in talking about the object of the war before the war really got started. The North's intention, what's being talked about, what they're showing is that they want to depopulate the southern states and make them all loyal to the federal government. Let's go to the war. Here's his brother, William Tecumseh Sherman. Everybody know William? Willie? Here's a letter he wrote. We're in our enemy's country, and I act accordingly. The war will soon assume a turn to extermination, not of soldiers alone. That's the least part of the trouble, but the people. And who did he send that to? That was just a warm little, hey, darling, here's what we're doing in the South. Let's go to the timeline, the object of the war, to Reconstruction. We're talking about the politics of the war and the overthrow of body politics. March, April 1861, Lincoln declares the Southern states' ordinances of secession null and void based upon the position that states cannot leave the Union. We're going to discuss all that here later. July of 1861, both houses of Congress passed resolutions clearly stating the object of the war is not for any purpose of conquest or subjugation. April to May 1865, Confederate Army surrenders to overwhelming opposition. December of 1865, the 11 previous Confederate states are considered back in the Union to the degree that they participate in amending the national constitution abolishing slavery. And these are the dates that they all did it. See, North Carolina abolished slavery, passed the 13th Amendment December 4th, 1865. So is North Carolina considered back in the Union in 1865? Yeah, because who's the only entities allowed to look at the Constitution and amend it or be given potential amendments and pass and ratify them? So if North Carolina is recognized as passing or ratifying the 13th Amendment on December 4th, 1865, are they not recognized as in the Union again? Participating, amending the Constitution, yeah. They're back in the Union, 1865. And isn't that what the object of the war was about? To get the states back in the Union undisturbed. April 2nd, 1866, peace is declared by presidential proclamation. Peace is declared throughout the land. War is over, April 2nd, 1866. 14th Amendment was proposed by the 39th Congress on June 13th, 1866. And what the 14th Amendment did was nationalize citizenship, changed the body politic of all the states from state citizens to citizens subject to Washington, make them national citizens. You're no longer a state citizen, you are a national citizen. And we're going to explain that and actually show that as we go on. So the 14th Amendment was going to make citizenship national because that would give the federal government authority to exercise their power in the state if you're their citizens. These were rejected by Texas, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Louisiana, and it was actually ratified by Tennessee. Tennessee was the only former Confederate state that ratified the 14th Amendment. March 2, 1867, the first Reconstruction Act is passed by Congress in times of peace. Remember, peace was declared a year earlier. There was times of peace. Over the president's veto, the president vetoed the Reconstruction Act. The act declared that no legal governments exist in any of the former Confederate states, except for Tennessee. Tennessee did not have to go through Reconstruction because they ratified the 14th Amendment. The Reconstruction Acts are based upon the principle of Congress's authority to conquer and subjugate Southern states' form of government and citizenry or body politic. So basically, the object of the war is changed 2 years after the war is over and a year after peace is declared. Now, isn't that a good time to change the object of the war? 2 years after it's over? You know, originally it's not for any purpose of conquest or subjugation. War is over, peace is declared, 1867, Congress says, we think this war was prosecuted for conquest. We think we do have the authority to subjugate their citizens. That's what happened. So what happened to the blood that was spilled by the Northern soldiers? Did they fight to conquer states? They fought to preserve the Union with all the dignity, equality, and rights of the several states unimpaired. They fought that the war was not for any purpose of conquest. Well, how do you have a war that's not for any purpose of conquest? The logic and reasoning they used was that the war was against people in rebellion to lawful authority. We have no authority to conquer the corporate body, the state constitution, their laws. What Congress said is this war really is a police action. We want to put these southern states back in, or the people in rebellion to lawful authority back in under the laws. We're not going to conquer their corporate state. But they changed that 2 years after the war was over. Let's talk about North Carolina. That's where we are, and that's what I'm talking about here. And most people don't know this part of our history. There was a state election, a general election, a vote on whether to hold a convention on secession. So you got to remember, at this point, seven southern states have seceded. South Carolina in December, and all the deep south states, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Texas, Arkansas, they've all seceded. And so what's North Carolina going to do? We held a state election on whether to hold a convention, not a state election on whether we're going to secede, but a state election on whether we're even going to discuss secession. We voted it down by 651 votes. We're staying in the Union. It's not an issue. We're in the Union. We're in the Union. We've already voted, put it to popular election. Citizens held the belief the federal government could not force one state to wage war on another. So they thought they were operating on the principle that these other southern states could secede. It's a different Union. We're staying in the Union. They can secede. They have a right. Because the issue is whether secession is lawful or not. A lot, and this was very controversial at the time. What is it? April 12, 1861, Fort Sumter is fired on. April 15, 1861, Lincoln calls on Governor Ellis to provide two regiments of troops to put down this rebellion. So now he's saying the war is inevitable, and North Carolina must decide whether to fight the North or the South. Who are we going to fight? Now it's going to be a war. Okay, we're in the Union. But do we fight the southern states and go against our beliefs that secession is lawful? Because that's the only reason we'd be fighting them. Well, let's look at what Governor John Ellis wrote back to Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln called for Governor Ellis to provide two regiments of troops to put down the rebellion in the seceded states. He says, I can be no party to this wicked violation of the laws of the country and to this war upon the liberties of a free people. You can get no troops from North Carolina. That was our response. Is that a noble response or is that a criminal act? So what did we do? We left the Union because we were forced to either perpetuate the violation of the Constitution by waging war on states, or, you know, it's like if someone says, hey, I got a really good idea. I need some money. Let's go rob a bank. Hop in the car with me. You know, that's Lincoln. Hey, let's go wage war. Governor Ellis, hop in the car. North Carolina, hop in the car with me. We're going to wage war. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I can't be a part of that wicked action. I can't do that. So did we leave the Union because we love slavery? And that's what an executive is supposed to do, represent the will of the people. So again, get pride in who we are. Don't believe the lies that we are this wicked North Carolinians, these slaveholders, these wicked, vile people, left the Union, waged war with the federal government so we could preserve the institution of slavery. Nothing could be further from the truth.
All right. Here we go. There you go. So we got that out of the way there. Facts. All right. Let's see what else here. Because there's no point, really. I mean, you know, I'm not going to sit here and, anybody's got anything you want to say, 657-383-0616, press 1. You know, but, week after week, I'm just tired of talking about the same things over and over again. You know, I'm not going to debate with people. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it anymore. I'm not going to participate in gossip. I'm not going to talk about Fannie and Trump because it's useless. I don't care about Joe Biden because none of that matters. It doesn't matter. They have no control or power over us. They don't influence us. You know, and people say, well, how could you say that? We're affected by it because we're in a jurisdiction and we contract with them. Unknowingly most of the time, but other times forcibly. I don't want to get off into a tangent here and go off to another subject. Again, how do we fix the problem? At the beginning of the podcast, we went over that. So, money thing, because we all have to, listen, money is very important. It's very, very important. And if we're going to have money and control money and have it in our possession, we need to know about it. You need to know how to use it. You should know how to spend it. You should know where it comes from. You should know everything about it, right? I mean, if you drive a car, most times, if a car breaks, you're going to take it to somebody who knows about it. I mean, most times you know about your car, right? You know what's inside your house. You know about, it's common sense. Let's use common sense here. So why wouldn't you know about money, where it came from, how it came about, who controls it, how this money problem we have, how can we correct this problem, how can we fix this inflation problem we have? Because everyone thinks the president controls inflation, okay, and that's not true. Well, I got into a little debate on Saturday night about that, with Biden economics, Trump and everything. Trump was an inspiration for the economy. Yes, things were better when Trump was president. Yes, he was a good puppet for the corporation. He was a good piece to stand up there and be a good mouthpiece. He's going to do this, he's going to do that, and yeah. And he got, that's great. It felt good. Things were the same. The economy was doing pretty good. Yes, gas prices were down. Yes, they were about $2.15, $2.20 a gallon. Yes. They weren't no 98 cents a gallon. They weren't $1.25. Yes, you probably had a rock and roll station come through town and do a special for a day or so, and it was 99 cents or something, whatever. But no, gas prices generally were not 98 cents a gallon. It wasn't $1.49 a gallon. Okay, all right. But anyway, let's see. How can we fix the Federal Reserve? How can we abolish the Federal Reserve? How can we do all this? Let's go to this right here. This is the only way. And it's not gold back this, gold back that. No. There's only one way we can fix the economy and do it the right and abolish the Federal Reserve. There's only one way. Okay? So let's get to that right now. Here, let's see. I think I got it right. If not, it'll go for about 15 minutes. So one and something. I don't know what to tell you. All right, here we go. Let's play this here. And then, like I said, we'll take any questions you want. So, hang on. It's not starting up on me. It figures. All right, just give me a second here, everybody. Live podcasting here. What do you expect? There was another thing too that I wanted to bring up anyway while I was here. The elections. We're in on this we're all in with this. That, you know, I mean, I ran for public office, and somebody said, "Well, why did you run for public office?" Because this is my answer to this right here, and the only way we could fix things is by infiltrating the corporation from within, getting elected, having lawful people who want to bring lawful government back and bring it to the corporation. Okay, go back as a corporate actor into the corporation, the de facto, and do what? Bring back common law and our republic by infiltrating. Well, the same way they destroyed our republic, basically. The same, you know, they did it slowly but surely over many, many years, right? Okay, here we go. They should play now. They should play with no problem. Here we go.
All the nations. For example, just as the Federal Reserve Act authorized the creation of a new national fiat currency called Federal Reserve Notes, the IMF has been given the authority to issue a world fiat money called Special Drawing Rights, or SDRs. To date, the IMF has created in excess of $30 billion worth of SDRs. Member nations are being pressured to make their currencies fully exchangeable for SDRs. In 1968, Congress approved laws authorizing the Fed to accept SDRs as reserves in the U.S. and to issue Federal Reserve notes in exchange for SDRs. What does that mean? It means that in the U.S., SDRs are already a part of our lawful money. And what about gold? SDRs are already partially backed by gold. And with two-thirds of world gold now in the hands of central banks, the money changers can go about structuring the world's economic future in whichever way they deem most profitable.
Keep in mind, just as the Fed is controlled by its board of governors, the IMF is controlled by its board of governors, which are either the heads of the different central banks or the heads of the various national treasury departments dominated by their central banks. Voting power in the IMF gives the U.S. and the U.K., that is to say the Fed and the Bank of England, effective control.
Just as the Fed controls the amount of money in the U.S., the BIS, IMF, and World Bank control the money supply for the world.
So we see the repetition of the old goldsmith's fraud replicated on the national scale with central banks like the Fed, and on the international scale by the three arms of the world central bank.
Is this organization of the BIS, the IMF, and the World Bank, which we refer to collectively as the world central bank, presently expanding and contracting world credit? Yes. Regulations put into effect in 1988 by the BIS required the world's bankers to raise their capital and reserves to 8% of liabilities by 1992. Increased capital requirements put an upper limit to the fractional reserve lending, similar to the way cash reserve requirements do. What is this seemingly insignificant regulation made in a Swiss city 8 years ago meant to the world?
It means our banks cannot loan more and more money to buy more and more time before the next depression, as a maximum loan ratio is now set. It means those nations with the lowest bank reserves in their systems have already felt the terrible effects of this credit contraction as their banks scramble to raise money to increase their reserves to 8%. To raise the money, they had to sell stocks, which depressed their stock markets and began the depression first in their countries.
Japan, which in 1988 had among the lowest capital and reserve requirements, and thus was the most affected by the regulation, has experienced a financial crash which began almost immediately in 1989, which has wiped out a staggering 50% of the value of its stock market since 1990 and 60% of the value of its commercial real estate. The Bank of Japan has lowered its interest rates to 0.5%, practically giving away money to resurrect the economy, but still the depression worsens.
Due to the $20 billion U.S. bailout of Mexico, the financial collapse in that nation is already known here. Yet despite the bailout, the economy continues to be a disaster. One huge debt after another is rolled over as new loans are being made simply to enable Mexico to pay the interest on the old loans. In the south of Mexico, the poor have been in open revolt as every spare peso is being siphoned out of the country to make interest payments.
It is important to note that a radical transfer of power is taking place as nations become subservient to a supranational world central bank controlled by a handful of the world's richest bankers.
As the IMF creates more and more SDRs by the stroke of a pen on IMF ledgers, more and more nations borrow them to pay interest on their mounting debts and gradually fall under the control of the faceless bureaucrats of the world central bank. As the worldwide depression worsens and spreads, this will give the world central bank the power of economic life and death over these nations. It will decide which nations will be permitted to receive further loans and which nations will starve. Despite all the rhetoric about development and the alleviation of poverty, the result is a steady transfer of wealth from the debtor nations to the money changers' central banks, which control the IMF and the World Bank. For example, in 1992, the third world debtor nations, which borrowed from the World Bank, paid $198 million more to the central banks of the developed nations for World Bank-funded purposes than they received from the World Bank. All this increases their permanent debt in exchange for temporary relief of poverty caused by prior borrowings. Already, these repayments exceed the amount of the new loans. By 1992, Africa's external debt had reached $290 billion, 2.5 times greater than in 1980, resulting in skyrocketing infant mortality rates and unemployment, deterioration of schools, housing, and the general health of the people.
The entire world faces the immeasurable suffering already destroying the third world and now Japan, all for the benefit of the money changers. As one prominent Brazilian politician put it,
"The Third World War has already started. It is a silent war, not for that reason any less sinister. The war is tearing down Brazil, Latin America, and practically all the Third World. Instead of soldiers dying, there are children. It is a war over the Third World debt, one which has as its main weapon interest, a weapon more deadly than the atom bomb, more shattering than a laser beam."
Although it would be absurd to ignore the pivotal role played by influential families such as the Rothschilds, the Warburgs, the Schiffs, the Morgans, and the Rockefellers in any review of the history of central banking and fractional banking, keep in mind, by now, central banks and the large commercial banks are up to 3 centuries old and deeply entrenched in the economic life of many nations. These banks are no longer dependent on clever individuals such as a Nathan Rothschild. Years ago, the question of ownership was important, but no longer. For example, both the Bank of England and the Bank of France were nationalized after World War II, and nothing changed, nothing at all. They endure and continue to grow, now protected by numerous laws, paid politicians, and mortgaged media, untouched by the changing of generations. 3 centuries have given them an aura of respectability. The old school tie is now worn by the 6th generation's son, who's been raised in a system that he may never question as he is named to serve on the governing boards of countless philanthropic organizations. To focus attention today on individuals or families, or to attempt to sort out the current holders of power serves little useful purpose and would be a distraction from the cure. The problem is far bigger than that. It is the corrupt banking system that was and is being used to consolidate vast wealth into fewer and fewer hands that is our current economic problem. Change the names of the main players now, and the problem will neither go away nor even miss a beat. Likewise, among the hordes of bureaucrats working in the World Bank, central banks, and international banks, only a tiny fraction have any idea of what's really going on. No doubt they'd be horrified to learn that their work is contributing to the terrible impoverishment and gradual enslavement of mankind to a few incredibly rich plutocrats. So really, there's no use in emphasizing the role of individuals anymore. And the problem even transcends the normal spectrum of political right and left. Both communism and socialism, as well as monopoly capitalism, have been used by the money changers. Today, they profit from either side of the new political spectrum. The big government welfare state on the so-called left wing versus the neoconservative laissez-faire capitalists who want big government totally out of their lives on the right wing. Either way, the bankers win. Monetary reform is the most important political issue facing this nation. That clarified, let's proceed to the conclusions in the spirit Lincoln declared, with malice towards none, with charity towards all. At the start of this video, we ask a number of troubling questions. Let's be sure we've answered them.
What's going on in America today? Why are we over our heads in debt? Why can't the politicians bring debt under control?
Why are we over our heads in debt? Because we're laboring under a debt money system that is designed and controlled by private bankers. Now, some will argue that the Federal Reserve System is a quasi-governmental agency. But the president appoints only two of the seven members of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors every 4 years. And he appoints them to 14-year terms, far longer than his own. The Senate does confirm those appointments, but the whole truth is that the president wouldn't dare appoint anyone to that board of whom Wall Street does not approve. Of course, this does not preclude the possibility that some honorable men may be appointed to the Board of Governors. But the fact is that the Fed is specifically designed to operate independently of our government, as are nearly all other central banks. Some argue that the Fed promotes monetary stability. We saw the current head of the Bank of England, Eddie George, claim that this was the most important role of a central bank. In fact, the Fed's record of stabilizing the economy shows it to be a miserable failure in this regard. Within the first 25 years of its existence, the Fed caused three major economic downturns, including the Great Depression, and for the last 30 years has shepherded the American economy into a period of unprecedented inflation. Again, this is not some wild conspiracy theory. It's a well-known fact among top economists. As Nobel Prize-winning economist Milton Friedman put it, "The stock of money, prices, and output was decidedly more unstable after the establishment of the Federal Reserve System than before. The most dramatic period of instability in output was, of course, the period between the two wars, which includes the severe monetary contractions of 1920-21, 1929-33, and 1937-38. No other 20-year period in American history contains as many as three such severe contractions. This evidence persuades me that at least a third of the price rise during and just after World War I is attributable to the establishment of the Federal Reserve System, and that the severity of each of the major contractions, 1920-21, 1929-33, and 1937-38, is directly attributable to acts of commission and omission by the reserve authorities. Any system which gives so much power and so much discretion to a few men, so that mistakes, excusable or not, can have such far-reaching effects, is a bad system. It is a bad system to believers in freedom just because it gives a few men such power without any effective check by the body politic.
This is the key political argument against an independent central bank. To paraphrase Clemenceau, money is much too serious a matter to be left to the central bankers. We must learn from our history before it is too late. Why can't politicians control the federal debt? Because all our money is created out of debt. Again, it's a debt-money system. Our money is created initially by the purchase of U.S. bonds. The public buys bonds like savings bonds. The banks buy bonds. Foreigners buy bonds. And when the Fed wants to create more money in the system, it buys bonds but pays for them with a simple bookkeeping entry which it creates out of nothing. Then this new money created by the Fed is multiplied by a factor of 10 by the banks thanks to the fractional reserve principle. So although the banks don't create currency, they do create checkbook money or deposits by making new loans. They even invest some of this created money. In fact, over $1 trillion of this privately created money has been used to purchase U.S. bonds on the open market, which provides the banks with roughly $50 billion in interest, risk-free, each year, less the interest they pay to some depositors. In this way, through fractional reserve lending, banks create over 90% of the money and therefore cause over 90% of our inflation. What can we do about all this? Fortunately, there's a way to fix the problem fairly easily, speedily, and without any serious financial problems. We can get our country totally out of debt in 1 to 2 years by simply paying off these U.S. bonds with debt-free U.S. notes, just like Lincoln issued. Of course, that by itself would create tremendous inflation since our currency is presently multiplied by the fractional reserve banking system. But here's the ingenious solution advanced in part by Milton Friedman to keep the money supply stable and avoid inflation and deflation while the debt is retired. As the Treasury buys up its bonds on the open market with U.S. notes, the reserve requirements of your hometown local bank will be proportionally raised, so the amount of money in circulation remains constant. As those holding bonds are paid off in U.S. notes, they will deposit this money, thus making available the currency then needed by the banks to increase their reserves. Once all the U.S. bonds are replaced with U.S. notes, banks will be at 100% reserve banking instead of the fractional reserve system currently in use. From this point on, the former Fed buildings will only be needed as a central clearinghouse for checks and as vaults for U.S. notes. The Federal Reserve Act will no longer be necessary and could be repealed. Monetary power can be transferred back to the Treasury Department. There would be no further creation or contraction of money by banks. By doing it this way, our national debt can be paid off in a single year or so, and the Fed and fractional reserve banking abolished without national bankruptcy, financial collapse, inflation or deflation, or any significant change in the way the average American goes about his business. To the average person, the primary difference would be that for the first time since the Federal Reserve Act was passed in 1913, taxes would begin to go down. Now there's a real national blessing for you rather than for Hamilton's banker friends. Now let's take a look at these proposals in more detail. Here are the main provisions of a Monetary Reform Act which needs to be passed by Congress. We've drafted a proposed Monetary Reform Act which follows at the end of this tape. Of course, variations with the same results would be equally welcome. One. Pay off the debt with debt-free U.S. notes. As Thomas Edison put it, if the U.S. can issue a dollar bond, it can issue a dollar bill. They both rest purely on the faith and credit of the United States government. This amounts to a simple substitution of one type of government obligation for another. One bears interest, the other doesn't. Federal Reserve notes could be used for this as well, but could not be printed after the Fed's abolished as we propose, so we suggest using U.S. notes instead.
2, abolish fractional reserve banking. As the debt is paid off, the reserve requirements of all banks and financial institutions would be raised proportionally at the same time to absorb the new U.S. notes, which would be deposited and become the bank's increased reserves. Towards the end of the first year of the transition period, the remaining liabilities of financial institutions would be assumed or acquired by the U.S. government in a one-time operation. In other words, they too would eventually be paid off with debt-free U.S. notes in order to keep the total money supply stable. At the end of the first year or so, all of the national debt would be paid, and we could start enjoying the benefits of full reserve banking. The Fed would be obsolete, an anachronism. 3, repeal the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 and the National Banking Act of 1864. These acts delegate the money power to a private banking monopoly. They must be repealed and the money power handed back to the Department of Treasury where they were initially under President Abraham Lincoln. No banker or person in any way affiliated with financial institutions should be allowed to regulate banking. After the first two reforms, these acts would serve no useful purpose anyway, since they relate to a fractional reserve banking system. 4, withdraw the U.S. from the IMF, the BIS, and the World Bank. These institutions, like the Federal Reserve, are designed to further centralize the power of the international bankers over the world's economy, and the U.S. must withdraw from them. Their harmless functions, such as currency exchange, can be accomplished either nationally or in new organizations limited to those functions. Such a monetary reform act would guarantee that the amount of money in circulation would stay very stable, causing neither inflation nor deflation. Remember, for the last three decades, the Fed has doubled the American money supply every 10 years. That fact and fractional reserve banking are the real causes of inflation and the reduction in our buying power, a hidden tax. These and other taxes are the real reasons both parents now have to work just to get by. The money supply should increase slowly to keep prices stable, roughly in proportion to population growth, about 3% per year, not at the whim of a group of bankers meeting in secret. In fact, all future decisions on how much money will be in the American economy must be made based on statistics of population growth and the price level index. The new monetary regulators and the Treasury Department, perhaps called the Monetary Committee, would have absolutely no discretion in this matter except in time of declared war. This would ensure a steady, stable money growth of roughly 3% per year, resulting in stable prices and no sharp changes in the money supply. To make certain the process is completely open and honest, all deliberations would be public, not secret, as meetings of the Fed's Board of Governors are today. How do we know this will work? Because these steps remove the two major causes of economic instability, the Fed and fractional reserve banking, and the newest one as well, the BIS, Bank of International Settlements. But most importantly, the danger of a severe depression would be eliminated. Let's listen to Milton Friedman on the single cause of severe economic depressions. I know of no severe depression in any country or any time that was not accompanied by a sharp decline in the stock of money, and equally of no sharp decline in the stock of money that was not accompanied by a severe depression. Issuing our own currency is not a radical solution. It's been advocated by Presidents Jefferson, Madison, Jackson, Van Buren, and Lincoln, but it's been used at different times throughout Europe as well. Perhaps the best example is one of the small islands off the coast of France in the English Channel. Called Guernsey, it's been using debt-free money issues to pay for large building projects for nearly 200 years. Here we are on Guernsey, and this is the Guernsey flower and vegetable market. Guernsey is one of the most successful examples of just how well a debt-free money system can work.
In 1815, a committee was appointed to investigate how best to finance this new market. The impoverished island could not afford more new taxes, so the state's fathers decided to try a revolutionary idea, issue their own paper money. They were just colorful paper notes, backed by nothing, but the people of this tiny island agreed to accept them and trade with them. To be sure they circulated widely, they were declared to be good for the payment of taxes. Of course, this idea was nothing new. It was exactly what America had done before the American Revolution, and there are many other examples throughout the world. But it was new to Guernsey, and it worked miracles. This market is still in use. And remember, it was built for no debt to the people of this island state.
But what if we follow Guernsey's example? How would the bankers react to these reforms? Certainly the International Bankers Cartel will oppose reforms that do away with their control of the world's economies as they have in the past. But it is equally certain that Congress has the constitutional authority and responsibility to authorize the issuance of debt-free money, U.S. notes, and to reform the very banking laws it ill-advisedly enacted. Undoubtedly, the bankers will claim that issuing debt-free money will cause severe inflation or make other dire predictions. But remember, it is fractional reserve banking which is the real cause of over 90% of all inflation, not whether debt-free U.S. notes are used to pay for government deficits. In the current system, any spending excesses on the part of Congress are turned into more debt bonds, and the 10% purchased by the Fed are then multiplied many times over by the bankers, causing over 90% of all inflation. Our fractional reserve and debt-based banking system is the problem. We must ignore its inevitable resistance to reform and remain firm until the cure is complete. As the director of the Bank of England in the 1920s, Sir Josiah Stamp put it, referring to this modern fractional reserve banking system, banking is conceived in iniquity and born in sin. Bankers own the earth.
All right, okay, okay.
Take it away from them.
Here we go. We don't have to go over 1,000 quotes about how evil the banks are. Anyway, that's how those five measures there, you would abolish the Federal Reserve System. The only way. No, you can't back the dollar by gold because the world leaders control 2/3 of the world's gold. So you're not going to get any gold. All right. There we go. I think that just every Tuesday, that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to do this. I'm just repeat the same show over and 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 over until we see things changing. We need to clean up our elections. Our elections are a fraud. They're a scam. I posted on my Facebook here tonight the different tally results I got that don't make any sense, where votes don't add up. My comment underneath was, people, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do? You know? I mean, because if we're just going to stomp our feet and complain and talk big and stay awake till 3 o'clock in the morning talking about it and nothing happens the next day, what good is it? Just wasting time. Just wasting time. You know? That's all we're doing. So, you know, I mean, you know, if you want to gossip or whatever, I mean, let's play poker or whatever, you know, whatever you want to do. You know, you don't want to waste time. Meanwhile, these New World Order thugs, these Rothschilds and these criminals are going to continue to take away everything you have and everything you own. And they're going to even take your soul in the end. And at the end, those for you that are atheists out there, your whole soul goes to, whether you believe it or not. So, let's see here. I'm going to check the board here. If anybody wants to call in here, 657-383-0616, press the number 1. You can participate. I'm going to get back my board here. There you go. There it is. Get back up here. All right. I got a few people on the phone line here, but nobody wants to press 1. That's okay. Good. No takers. Let's see here. Well, there's 1. All right. Here we go. Private caller, you're on.
Okay, Joe, I heard your commentary there and the commentators, and I got to admit, it's pretty interesting. I agree with most of it, not all of it, certainly most of it, certainly about fractional banking. But look, your commentators were repeatedly saying the same thing over and over again. We have to repeal the Act, the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, the Banking, U.S. Banking Act of 1846. Those are legislative actions. They are accomplished by legislators, which means we got to get the legislators elected who will repeal them. Now, if you're going to say that since all elections are fraud, and therefore it's meaningless to participate in them, how are you going to get the people elected to repeal the legislation that seems to be the core of the flush?
Well, Sarge, you didn't listen to the beginning of the podcast then, obviously, when I had in about the
Civil War. No, I came in a little late.
Okay, well, you missed it about the Civil War, and you missed it about the Republic and how we can restore our Republic lawfully. And so, yes, Sarge, you're absolutely correct. We have to return lawful government, because if everything we've done since the abandonment of the 39th Congress, if everything we've done by force since then is a fraud, everything that we've enacted, it's been a fraud, it's been a lie. So we have to go all the way back to that time period and restore our republic lawfully, restore our constitutional republic. And also, I stuck up for you, actually. I played something in the beginning about our republic and our Constitution and Bill of Rights, and I directed it towards John Doe. Remember how John Doe would argue with you about how, you know, you're a prostitute, you're pimping for the, you know, I know his little saying, how he goes, because it's because his way isn't met. Yeah. Well, I had a guy explain that perfectly, why John Doe is wrong, and you were right, actually. You know, so you can't have, he's wrong how he's viewing the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. He's wrong. And that's not how it was set up.
It's an all or nothing proposition. Everybody's got to agree to everything. It's impossible.
That's impossible. Yeah, you know, no, that's not how it was set up.
Unless you form an organization where everybody's in agreement before you form the organization, and that's the reason you form the organization, and even then you get dissent. In any organization after it's formed.
No, justice and judgment. Justice and judgment and equity. That's what he went over, and that's what the Constitution, read the Bill of Rights, went over the words and the meanings of them, what the founders meant, quoted what the founders said and what they talked about. And that can be, you know, people get that. Well, as long as I govern myself and I don't hurt anybody, I should be able to do whatever I want. No, that's not the way it works. That's not the way it works. Sorry, I hate to break it to you.
Well,
I got 907 to put his hand up, too. Go ahead, Sarge.
If anybody doubts the necessity for the police power, all I can do is refer you to Haiti. The lack of police gets you a police state. That's eventually what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because there isn't...
I got 907, Sarge. I got 907 on here, and I got some private caller. We'll get a police state.
Let Sarge finish out.
Go ahead.
Yeah, like I was saying, you know, the lack of decent policing, I'm talking about civil order policing, the kind that we all agree we need to have. I'm not talking about the kind of corrupt policing that happens in all these big cities that have the same political machine, election cycle after election cycle, and the corruption gets entrenched. I'm talking about civil policing that maintains civil order and maintains civil society. If you don't have that kind of policing, you get what's going on in Haiti. Remember what happened with Barack Obama. Barack Obama convinced Aristide to get rid of the police and the army, essentially. Took over with the gangs in their place. And that's why it led to this now. From 2012 to now, the direct result of Barack Obama's meddling in Haitian affairs. So, like we talked about, you're talking about with the Federal Reserve and with the need to change. I guess another way, other than legislation, would be a convention of states, but you got to admit, that's going to be a ways off before that gets going. That's going to be a little ways absent a real catastrophe that makes everybody focus their attention. That's going to be a ways off. In the meantime, the only other way is to elect the appropriate legislature who will repeal these acts that are standing in the way of economic reform.
I agree. Go ahead, 907, and I got a private caller on here, too. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Well, I was going to say, with the organizations where everybody was 100% in agreement with everything, I would never want to be a part of one of those. Because those organizations crash and burn because they all agree on the same bad thing when they agree. Somebody has to be there, play devil's advocate, show what happens if you do it, what happens if you don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. That's a good point. Private caller, who's on here? Private caller. Got a private caller on here. Put their hand up.
Can you hear me, Joe?
Oh, John Doe. How you doing? Yes.
Yeah, I just tuned in just a hair bit before I heard Sarge come on, so I heard my name, but I didn't know if it how it related to the beginning of the show.
Well, your idea of what our government – I know we've had many in-depth discussions. You and Sarge have, and you and I have, and I was able to find a piece recently that somebody just did that explained our constitutional republic and our system of government and how it operates and why laws are created and, you know, things are done and judgment and equity and justice and the meanings of these words in our Constitution and what, you know, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness means. And so your idea, how you present it, like you said, sometimes you don't present things, maybe you're still learning, but the way you presented it, or presented this as Sarge, your argument, you're wrong. That just because you don't get your way and you disagree with the way something is and we vote against you, then we're somehow committing fraud and oppressing upon you. No, that's not true. That's not true. Did I explain it right, Sarge?
That's a little simplified, but yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, you just can't get 100% consensus in any society that's not utterly regimented. It's not possible.
So you're legalizing bullying, is what you're saying?
Yeah,
that's an unfortunate characterization. But again, our Constitution is not intended for unanimity. It was intended for a rough consensus in the form of a representative government. It was never intended for unanimity. Never, never. That's why they argued so much at the Constitutional Convention. You had literally had differing factions arguing about the form the Constitution was supposed to take. And it was never really resolved. It wound up in a civil war, after all, a couple of the biggest issues.
Yeah, that's why we're working towards a more perfect union in continuing the dialogue, because otherwise we're in violation of the very Constitution we say we stand on, because if there's no title of nobility in this system of governing, then nobody has a right to dictate to anybody else anything unless there's bullying. And that falls
right,
in the face of Article 4, Section 2, citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities as citizens of the several states.
If you believe that, then you would have to say that any form of law is bullying. Any law is bullying because it always means it has to be enforced against someone by definition.
No, we're all – well, it's hard to explain in the sense we're all agreeing to be held accountable to that what we are willing to have ourselves to be held accountable to. Because naturally, the first rule is do no harm.
So let me ask you this: if you legalize
bullying, then you're breaking the first rule.
So let me ask you this, John Doe. All right, you live in a neighborhood. I mean, I don't know where you live, but you live in a neighborhood, subdivision type neighborhood. And your next door neighbor decides he's not going to pay the sewer bill no more. He don't give a fuck. He ain't going to take it. And he builds an outhouse in his backyard up against your fence. So what are you going to do? You going to be a bully and tell him he can't shit in his outhouse and he has to use the sewer to maintain sanitary conditions in the neighborhood? Or just what?
Well, I have to prove harm. It's just the same thing as the people that were trying to force the vaccines on us. They didn't prove there was a harm being done to force us to get vaccines.
So you have to prove harm, even though you know that come a heavy rain and stuff like that, the shit at the bottom of his outhouse is going to leach into your yard.
Going to leach into your garden.
Okay, I think history will prove that.
Huh?
I got three here too, guys.
The experience of history allows us to use predecessor experiences to prove our case for what you're referring to, because you bring up a very good point. There's no harm done until it overflows and flows into my yard.
Oh, no, there's no harm done when the sweet aroma of the outhouse starts wafting into your house. There's no harm done.
But the problem with that is the harm is done at the initial action of it, because you know the consequences of what it's going to result in. It's not good. So no, you can't. That's not bullying. No, that can't happen. That's unhealthy. I mean, there's morals you have to live by. There's laws. Just common sense is what it should be called. You wouldn't want to permit that, because you're, number one, you're going to infect your water. You're infecting the ground, the stench of it. It's unclean. It's unsanitary. It brings disease. I mean, whatever, there's things like that that should not even have to be a law. That should be just, I don't know what you call it.
All right. Listen, democracy and our republic and our constitution. This guy, all right, he must have missed it. It's like 4 minutes and five. He explains our Bill of Rights and everything, and the words and the meanings of what it means, John Doe. You're taking those meanings and that title nobility, and you're applying them wrong. This guy's going to explain it to you right now. He's a professor and very well read. I know this guy personally, actually. So, but he was on a podcast, and he just happened to go over this, and I was like, this is perfect for John Doe. So let me play this for you, John Doe. And then, I mean, he explains it. I just don't know how else, any other way that we just keep going back and forth on it. So let me just go right here. Let me play this, please.
First thing I want to speak about, I want to start out speaking about democracy. And one of the things that you're hearing from President Biden and his administration is that if you elect Donald Trump to be the next president, 47th president of the United States, that he will destroy democracy. So I want to start out by giving you a definition of what democracy is. And this definition comes from Webster's 1828 dictionary. And here's what it says. Democracy is this: a form of government in which the supreme power is lodged in the hands of the people collectively. You'll recall that during the time of the Civil War, there was that great conflict there at Gettysburg, and when that conflict, that battle had subsided, and that ground was being dedicated as, you know, mm-hmm. hallowed ground regarding all the men that died there during that battle. Abraham Lincoln made his famous Gettysburg Address, and he ended his speech with these words, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. And so that, in essence, is what democracy is. Democracy is when you're putting the supreme power of government in the hands of the people collectively. Now, in a democracy, a real democracy, all right, the people meet and exercise the government in person, meaning this. An illustration that I might think of is maybe a church business meeting, where you have the members of a congregation assembled together for the express purpose of making a decision, and then, you know, the situation is discussed and set forth, and then right there and then, okay, they take a vote on whether they're going to go forward with this, you know, proposal or they're not.
Right.
Okay, but that's what a democracy is. All right, it's not only putting the power in the hands of the people, but it's when the people meet and exercise government in person in a situation such as that. Our government is a democratic republic. meaning, all right, in a republic, the people assemble and administer it by representatives and elected officials. So, yes, the power collectively is in the hands of the people, but they elect officials, in our case, you know, to the House of Representatives or to the Senate, to represent us, to do the will of the people when those bodies assemble together to discuss matters, make laws, and then ultimately bring them to a vote. Now, living in a democracy does not mean that an individual has the right or liberty to do anything that they feel is right if it violates natural law. See, we're living in a day and time, and when, you know, people think, okay, if I'm free and I'm living in a democracy, I can do anything that I want to do, in essence, if it maybe doesn't hurt somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. I'll say that again. All right? Living in a democracy is the right in regard to the individual, all right, to do what he has liberty to do if it does not violate natural law. And natural law are those laws that God ordained, and those laws are found in Scripture. Oh, that's natural law. All right, for instance, when we've quoted from the Declaration of Independence before, but I'll read the second paragraph again here. It says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles. Now, you see, we understand that under these natural laws, which are, as is already stated, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, these are given to us by God, and it's the purpose of government, all right, to secure these freedoms and these liberties that are given to us by God so that we can live accordingly.
Right.
All right, now, so if it goes against the law of God, God's natural laws that he's ordained, then you don't have the right to do it.
Right.
You see? Anyways, we're living in a time when elected leaders, all right, in regard to our government, are violating the principles upon which, you know, our nation was founded. Now, in paragraph one, I want to read to you paragraph one from the Constitution. And here's what paragraph one in regard to the Constitution says. We the people, you see, deriving its power from the people. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, and provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and to secure the blessings of liberty in ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. So these principles upon which this country were founded were, first of all, declared in the Declaration of Independence,
right.
And then the purpose of the Constitution was to ensure that we have the rights, all right, that God has given to supposedly to every individual so that we can live, you know, as the Constitution says, you know, to do all those things, establish justice, domestic tranquility, so forth and so on. Now, I want you to consider those couple of words that were found in that paragraph, and those words were establish justice. The word justice has the idea of impartiality or equal treatment under the law. And really, all right, that word, established justice, which we're saying means impartiality or equal treatment under the law, is synonymous with the word equity. But like so many times, words that were used in the past, all right, no longer have the same definition or meaning as they do now in the present.
Mm-hmm.
All right, in regard to equity, you hear a lot of that spoke about that, you know, DEI, you know, in regard to, you know, treatment of people, so forth and so on, and the E stands for equity. Equity today means that everybody has to start at the same place in life.
Mm-hmm. That's the mindset today. And if someone can't start at the same place in life as another individual, that person has to have, excuse me, opportunities given to them so that, you know, they can function and start at that very same place. That's not what equity is all about. All right. Equity means giving to every man, all right, impartiality in regard to what is due him under the law. And so you have the word justice. The word justice and the word judgment are two words, all right, that go together. Justice.
All right. All right. So does that clear anything up? Anybody want to comment on that? Because that's pretty right, spot on, I would say. Anybody?
Yeah, Joe, I use the term a lot of times when I'm talking to you about the police power, and that's what police power is. The police power means, and even though police have to enforce the law, but strictly speaking, police power is simply that those actions and those regulations and those laws and ensure the safety, health, and welfare of the citizens. That's what the police power is, and the police power is legislative, it's law enforcement, it's judicial, it's civic. That's what police power is. And the whole purpose of the Constitution was to establish the limits, not deny altogether police power, because the framers understood police power is vital to liberty, because you can't have liberty without some kind of order. Otherwise, you have gangs like you got in Haiti running everything, and you don't know what the score is. So the idea was to define the limits of the police power, not deny it altogether.
Yeah.
What John Doe personally wants to do, it seems like to me, is to deny the police power altogether.
Yep. I got 214 here, but I don't want John Doe to go unforgotten here. So, John Doe, you just cue in anytime you want. 214 here. You put your hand up.
Hi, Gunslinger. I was just listening there for a minute. I was on the phone.
Okay.
Go ahead. All right.
John Doe, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, as far as what you let us hear on that gentleman, there is nothing that he said that contradicts anything I said. I mean, if we're truly based on God's word and, you know, love your neighbor as yourself, then you're not going to force your fellow American to be less than you. And if you get your will mutually, reciprocally enacted, codified, and ratified as law, then loving your neighbor means you're going to allow them that same privilege and or immunity. However, if you don't, then you just violated the whole foundation of what you said you stand on, or we, or whoever made the claim. Does that make sense?
Okay. Sarge, what do you think?
I don't know. That definition is just too all-encompassing. I mean, I don't see having failed to achieve the necessary consensus to either prevent or to instill or install a law as saying someone is lesser than. It means that under the scheme envisioned by the Constitution, the representative nature of the government in the form of legislatures have come to a decision that more people than not appear to agree with, unless, of course, you're talking about immigration. Other than that, most things usually do have a kind of consensus where most of the people say this law ought to be passed, because they usually reelect the legislators to pass the laws, unless it's something so egregious to the point where they don't want to put them back in anymore. I don't see it as being lesser than simply because you don't prevail in an argument. I think that's a very bad inaccurate way to characterize.
Maybe it's a bad characterization. The point, though, too, we learn if you really study history, is Jesus had problems with the priests and the people that were in power that were basically making decisions for other people that were not allowed to sit at the same table and make decisions on their own behalf. And so, therefore, this gentleman speaking on the video, or I mean the audio roll-in that Joe did, basically reinforcing that this natural law is based on God's law, and how, you know, he didn't say love your neighbor as yourself,
But that natural law makes sense to me in loving your neighbor as yourself, because that's the true just law, is when you treat others with the same respect, dignity, and due consideration you expect for yourself. Now, if I go into a particular group and you're a part of that group, and I decide, or me and a majority of that group decide we're going to do things a certain way, and we don't even allow your vote to count, because we're using majority vote tricks to isolate you and negate you, well, then we don't love you. We're not. That's not true just law. Mind scan, manipulating somebody to isolate them so their vote doesn't count.
Well tell me, John. He also said that we're not all on the same level playing field. We're not all the same. He also said that, you know, we don't get the same start as everyone else gets.
Well, tell me, John, have you taken in your disagreements, in your dissent, have you taken into account the fact that there is an appeals process, there's a way to protest certain laws, and frequently, not most of the time, but frequently, these laws get repealed and or altered? I mean, are you taking any account of that?
Yes, I have. In due respect to that, we know throughout even recent history, this more perfect union is winding out of control and getting worse. So the people that are being able to access the system and pull the levers of power are not operating it in that spirit of the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, yeah.
So therefore,
I agree.
Our system is being destroyed by the very people that are using it to consolidate power and deny you and the rest of us, or Joe, an opportunity to serve, whenever naturally they want to use the systems of our society to fraudulently defame a person in order to stop them from having a true opportunity to convince the rest of us to vote for them. Or with the legislature, it seems like the only people that get into legislature is certain types of people with certain levels of status in our society. So therefore, a big majority of the rest of us are not represented at all.
True.
So that's
true.
Why I'm always saying our system, if you read the words, no title of nobility in the system of governing, means that no one person gets to dictate the burdens, encumbrances, and obligations to any other person. You get to only burden and encumber and obligate yourself. And that's where we would find that there would be limited government, because most people aren't going to allow you to be bullying them legislatively and making them their legislative slave. Or, like I say, your pimp representing you like a prostitute.
Well, John, I don't know of any law that ever gets passed by one person.
You are a prostitute.
Well, what do you mean by that?
John, I mean, what law has ever...
And they are your pimps because you elect them.
Yeah. Wrong. You're throwing the legal, the whole fiduciary agency relationship out the window. Your property is the self-governing of you. My property is the self-governing of me. And all of the different senators and congressmen, their self-governing of them is their, you know, private property. So if they get into office and then they use the power of our governing to deny you of having your will be done for your private property, then they've actually committed undue influence and coercion and extortion or duress by making sure their will is mutually and reciprocally enacted with all of the other wolves in the system. But you, as the sheep being left on the outside, you're getting all these special hurdles and walls and speed bumps you got to jump through while they create a high-speed fast lane to their pursuit of happiness with golden parachute programs and stuff to make sure they have a life worth living.
Well, you know what, John? John Doe, here is the solution. You have to remove them from that position. unless you remove them from that position, you are subject to your pimp's way. You will do what your pimp tells you until you get a new pimp.
But you're saying you, and that's individual. You mean we.
You. You go out and convince enough people in your voting district or your area to remove that person from that position, and that is on you. If you do not like it, if you do not like the way he or she is treating you from the position that you've elected him to, and your district elected him to, then it is up to you to remove that person.
No, it's not up to me to remove that person. Under the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, Congress shall make no law abridging the right of the people to petition their government for redress of grievance. If they do not provide you a redress of grievance, then therefore they are committing undue influence and denying you your due process rights of good faith bargaining, good faith negotiating, mutuality of agreement, freedom of contract, freedom of conscience, and then they're destroying the legal effect of your private property by not upholding the rule that we are all equal in governing, and your will is just as significant, important, valuable, and worthy as any other person's. Otherwise, they're creating favors.
You have two options in removing that person that is offending you, taking your rights and liberty. You have one, the ballot box, or you have the bullet box. If that person is stepping all over your rights and it angers you, you better do something about it. Sitting down and whining about it just means, I guess I'll have to take it.
But it sounds like the people that argue from that standpoint are suffering Stockholm syndrome. The masters have convinced you psychologically that that's the way it works, and that's why I keep explaining these things that I'm just explaining, because your intellectual property, the self-governing of you, is yours. Nobody gets to circumvent that. Otherwise, they cannot hold you accountable to laws, rules, processes, and procedures that they put into place, but they're not giving you the same privilege of making sure the laws are in place from your perspective. You get what I'm saying?
If I want a law that imposes on you, John Doe, I have to petition my representatives of the government to enact such a law.
And why do you complain about so much of the law and how they're treating Donald Trump and stuff? Because it's wrong. They're not loving their neighbor as themselves. They're abusing the system and their privilege and priority and power.
John, it is wrong. And it will remain to be wrong until such times as they are removed. There will be no changes to anything that you're whining about until you remove the person who is causing the problem.
But John Doe, you read it yourself, John Doe. You said you have the right to petition your government for redress of grievances. What it doesn't say is you have a guarantee of that redress, and you see and read it as though it does say that.
Hey, wait. The Fifth Amendment, no person shall, be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. My property is the self-governing of me, just like your property is self-governing of you, and due process of law is the right for me to have, contractual obligations, good faith bargaining, mutuality of agreement, freedom of contract, freedom of conscience, freedom of association.
So my question to you is there ever a time at which a person can be deprived of life or liberty or property when and if they have received adequate due process of law? Is it ever a time? Does it ever apply, especially if the person who is the object of it contests it?
I'm not sure I follow you. I need
more
info.
Okay. Well, as you just said it. The Fifth Amendment and the 14th Amendment says that you have to have due process of law for you can deprive of life, liberty, or property. So my question to you is, is there ever a time after you receive due process of law and you still contest the outcome of that due process, is there ever a time when that can be implemented? If you contest, remember,
well,
you don't agree with it.
When you're using due process in the context of the way it's used today, we're not afforded true due process. Because they're always claiming, well, you had no direct harm, so therefore you have no standing, so therefore we don't have to provide you due process. Bull, if there's ever an obligation that I'm going to be held accountable to, whether I've been directly affected to it or not, I have a right of standing for something that I'm going to lose or gain, and that's my liberty.
Well, I'm still not sure if you answered my question. Is there ever a time when it is appropriate or constitutional or proper to deprive anyone of life, liberty, or property when they contest the outcome of the due process? Ever?
It depends what harm was being done, I would think.
So it's kind of is it subjective or is it objective according to the elements of the offense in the law?
Well, to a certain, I mean, without understanding really the details, I would think it would be objective. But not understanding fully what you're thinking, I don't know if it would be subjective, but I'm thinking objective.
I got a private caller, guys.
And you want the right to petition your grievances, which you do, and you should. But just because you petition your grievances does not mean they will act or does not mean that it will change what you're grieving.
Exactly. I agree with
that. It does not give you that guarantee. It gives you the guarantee that you can petition.
Okay, for the third time, I agree with you, Boyd, on that comment.
All right, guys, I got a private caller. Guys, time out. I got a private caller with their hand up. Been waiting a little while. Play a private caller.
Hey, my friend, Joe Gibson. How about you, sir?
Mike.
Yes.
What's up, Mike?
Yes, sir. You know, I want to send greetings to all Iranian Americans for their new year. It's going to start in about 8:06 Pacific time. And around the globe as well. And I have a question for your forum. I mean, the New World Order is from where? British imperialism. British imperialism, sack up Iran, sack up all other countries, now they're sacking up United States. Do you believe that? Yes or no? And if yes, why? And if no, why not? Go ahead, please.
Who wants to answer that first?
Can you repeat that? I couldn't make out exactly what he said. And, Mike, it's good
to
hear your voice again.
Yeah, can you say it a little more clear? Yeah, Mike, can you say it a little more clear, please?
Empire is the owner of the New World Order. So they fuck up Iran in 1979. They fuck up many other countries. So now it's our turn to be fucked up in the United States. Do you believe that British imperialism, British are causing all this havoc on Americans right now? And if yes, why yes? And if not, why not? Go ahead, please.
All right. I think what he's asking is, John Doe, is the British Empire in basically the major player of the New World Order, and are they the ones that are causing all these problems today? Go ahead, John Doe.
I don't know for sure, but I think they are one of the players, and they are part of that globalist deep state organization that's trying to rule over the rest of us. They're not the only player, though.
So we are in agreement on that, that the New World Order actually was from much, much more, maybe 400 years back it started. And what we saw in Iran, it was the British and other ones, as you mentioned, together, they messed up the Iran and brought Ayatollahs, and now Ayatollahs under umbrella of the Putin atom bomb. And
the New World Order, Mike, the New World Order dates back to Nimrod and the Tower of Babel, when they would climb up because they were going to be like God. Okay, that's when it started.
Okay, we are in agreement. It's a long time ago. Maybe a timeline, little bit, we may have difference, 500 years or over 500 years. But yes, we are in agreement. It started at some point. Yes. Go ahead, please.
The New World Order consists of a lot of the Roman Vatican Church, the Jesuits, the Zionists, many, like John Doe said, there's many different players. It's just not the British Columbia. It's just not England. They're not in charge of the New World Order. So the Bank of England is a major player of it. But, the Rothschilds.
They've infiltrated every aspect of every government and country on this planet.
So we are in agreement that British Empire, those people who are running the show behind the curtain in England, they are the New World Order, and they cause havoc in Iran. They cause all these problems in Iran and many other countries, and now it's time for us. Am I right or wrong?
No.
Go ahead, please.
No. It's not just the British government. No, it's not them. It's the Zionists. The Jesuits from the Roman Vatican Church. No, it's not just the British government. There's many different elements of the New World Order.
Okay, so you're saying different elements. Yes, I understand. But one of them is the British. Am I right or wrong?
I'm sure. Rothschilds, which are Jews. Bank of England. Yeah, there's one of them. Yeah, they're one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. The British were infiltrated at an early stage with the Rothschilds when banking was initiated there. But the thing about it is the sect of people that have started that movement and those beliefs make safe haven in all countries right now, but let's call home base Switzerland and London City. Which you have like the Vatican, London City, and Washington, D.C. are the only three places on the planet that have their own self-governing laws and everything else. They don't answer to anybody but themselves because they dictate themselves.
We're going into overtime, guys. We're going into overtime, so I just want to let you know that. Guys who want to call in, do it now, 657-383-0616. 1 minute left, going to overtime. All right, go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. We are in agreement there. There are so many elements. Absolutely, you guys are right. And there are so many players. Absolutely right. And it's now the time to mess up United States, and it's up to us not to take the bait. And if we took the bait, then shame on us. We should be aware that they are trying to create whatever you want to call it, Civil War II, or they want to call, a lot of disunity between us as Americans. But, when you see an American in Singapore, for example, oh my gosh, we all appreciate each other. But the problem in the United States, we don't appreciate each other. And that's the biggest problem. And if we could appreciate each other, like imagine that we saw each other in London or Beirut or any other countries in the world, for example, you know, how we act together, how we love each other, how we say, okay, you know, wow, I felt, you know, a person from Kansas, oh my gosh, or et cetera. But, you know, we have to appreciate each other in this country. If we don't appreciate, if we don't care for each other in this country, the new world order will win, and they will do everything to us to be disunited, and they can do everything from their, you know, from their hands and play with us any way they want. Go ahead, please.
109 countries, Mike, 109 countries up to this day have banished, exiled, excommunicated 109 countries 1,030 times. This country, in order for the world in general to move forward and to get back to having some civility, normality, dignity, and respect, has to make it 110. They have to be stopped. God himself sent the armies of Joshua out to put these people to the sword. That wasn't to be just a walk in the park. God flooded this earth because of these people. These are the same people. They have escaped because they're Luciferian. They are of the devil, the synagogue of Satan. And people in America don't realize it yet because it's not affecting them like it has the people that know about them. Once you know about them, you start to see how in-depth and how sickening they are. But America hasn't woke up to them yet. And that's the problem.
Absolutely. Yes, many, many people don't know. People, because Generation X, they don't care. They care for TikTok, and any other things, you know, that they give us. X or Twitter or et cetera, et cetera. But,
you know,
yes,
I've said it from the get-go. Our cell phones are one of the greatest things that have ever been invented for one reason that I think of. You can have or ask a question. You can find out any information about anything in the world.
Absolutely.
But on the other
Absolutely.
Hand, it's one of the worst things ever because it's demonic, pornographic, and it's ruined the children of this world because all they do is stare down at the phone all day and they have no direction. They look to this device for direction, and that's why you see TikTok being taken away because that's the, you know, it's the propaganda that pushed it. It's evil. So what comes across it, and it some of it is. There's not
absolutely.
You can find
anything China.
You want.
Absolutely, it's from China, and it's not the two way. If it was a two way, maybe it was okay. But you see, China,
mm-hmm.
they control everything on through
That's
America.
Right.
But we don't let we cannot put something in TikTok, and then somebody see in China because theirs is closed circuit. It's like North Korea. So basically, they control everything that is on the their sub-internet system are. And so it's useless, TikTok, though. TikTok. I mean, it's a hell. It's better to be out of everybody because, you know, it's just the Chinese colonists. They integrate into our society. And that's why
that's right.
You have to get rid of it ASAP.
I think Snapchat, if you guys know what Snapchat is actually worse than TikTok by 100 times due to the fact that you can have your kids or whatever. I've watched several different parents in meetings, at city council meetings, where they're talking about for 2 minutes you can get on Snapchat and it localizes you. It gets your location very quickly. You can just type in, I want to buy a 12-pack of Bud Light. Someone on that device, on that platform, will contact you and offer you to bring it to you. Now, and I'm talking about everything, pedophilia, prostitution, drugs, alcohol, guns. It's a big problem. So Snapchat, to me, is 10 times worse than TikTok, but TikTok's owned by the Chinese, so that's the – I guess America wants to look at that like it's more of a
a Chi-Com or the communists are here. That's what they're running. And it is true. They're probably collecting a lot of data on people and getting information that they shouldn't be. But we're letting them walk across the border. What the hell's the difference?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. We all understand each other's commonality. We have a lot of commonalities. We may have some differences. Differences is always there. I mean, a lot of commonalities. We can see that, yes, Chinese propaganda for American kids and American mass public. I mean, that's why we have to get rid of it ASAP, because it's not fair that it's one way
right.
a street. It has to be a two-way street. If they want it, we have to be able to send any information to the Chinese and let the Chinese decide if it's right or wrong.
And I thought about this too, Mike. I've been to China, and I want to say this about that. The Chinese people in general are good people. Make no mistake about that. It's the pricks, the sickos running the government, the heads of state in that area, just like America. People look at, they say America, and they think of all of us talking on this call, and even Putin. And I'm no fan of Putin, but you have people in power that realize the ones in power are the problem. It's not the general population. But what do we do when we know that there's 7 or 8 battalions already of Chinese middle-aged young men that have made it here for seeking asylum? But why are they seeking asylum out of China? I don't understand it. And you're in international law being broken where nobody's stopping at the next country over to get their safe haven. But I believe America has pissed off enough countries, big and small, that some of them have gathered up and said, you know what, this is a perfect time, because what they've done everything but try to run our country like dictators, come in and tear our country. And if you go against the dollar and you want to talk about the British, anyone that goes against that monetary system, anyone in the history of it being in inception, has been put to death, their country's destroyed. You want to start with Hitler? Go ahead. He wanted to get away from the system. Gaddafi.
And Saddam Hussein, too.
Saddam Hussein. You know, it's all money-based a problem. I don't think religion's that big of a problem. Some want to kill each other, sure. But you look at the area of Israel now, look back in 2,000 years, you had Muslims, Jews, and Christians all in that area getting along until the 1948 crew came in, this New World Order, these people that sit in this Netanyahu, the Bushes, you know, anybody's involved in a secret society, there's a reason they're doing something secret, they're doing something wrong, say that, and they're the ones that have been dictating what's going on around this world, and we've got to, as a people, realize that, because if we don't, we're done. I can't imagine what the kids today, how bad they are, what they're going through. Who's going to be their leaders when they're 25? Who's going to run for president when they're 25? I can't even imagine what that person's going to be like. God help them. God help them. But if we don't change it in the next year to 2 years, this country is cooked.
Like any other country, you know, because you mentioned that illegal immigration, a lot of foreigners, Chinese, IRGC, and many other ones, they come in inside the United States and et cetera. Absolutely. You know, if a country doesn't have a borderline, so there's no country left. And there will be no country left.
That's right.
Look at North Korea. North Korea, even China. You put your leg one foot, one feet, into the territory, my gosh, you will be taken, you will be questioned, you will be tortured to death almost,
yep.
And then they put you into their FEMA camp. And
every country in the world, every other country in the world has that, basically, that philosophy, because why can't we go to Israel? Why won't Israel let anybody in there? Why won't the Jewish sect of people let anybody assimilate with them? They don't want it. But yet the white Europeans are supposed to, in America, fold and bend over to let all this happen. And when we let these people in and we don't make it clear that, hey, this is America, we have laws, we have rules that you have to abide by. They're not, and it's for everybody, not individual groups. There's no racism, none of that. It applies to human beings. And if you can't follow those laws and assimilate with us, get out of here or don't come. Can't let these people sit in governmental seats like we've let happen. Ilhan Omar, known terrorist factions, and dictate laws for this country, because all they're going to do is rewind, fall back to what they're from, what they wanted to get away from. And we got it now.
We don't have problems with legal immigration. In every country, we have legal immigration, whether it's XYZ country, and it's the people wait on the line. People come through their relatives or whatever. Okay, that's fine. They assimilate, of course, with respective country that they are going to be immigrated to. And, France and it's many, many other countries. But at the same time, we have brought a lot of these people that are crazy. There are, like from Palestine, from Beirut, from many other parts of those kind of wars that we said, hey, let them come. And now, look at London. London, there are so much from Pakistan. I mean, I don't want to name any specific country.
Did you see the camels walking up the middle of London through the streets?
Right. Exactly.
Oh, my God.
So they say that we will turn London into ashes. Why we should do that? Why we have to bring good people like me, like anybody else, etc. We've gone through 100 times, things, security check, security, blah, 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 health check, to make sure we are coming here. We don't have, any kind of
Mike,
issues.
You know what they've done? People don't realize that they're emptying their jails out of the worst people in their countries to get them out of their hair. They're sending them over here. By us not holding our politicians accountable for the actions that they're committing and the treason and the laws that they're breaking, is only when we see that happening and they don't hold it. Nobody speaks up. You hear a couple of people talk back and forth, some meetings, but you have people like Hillary Clinton that Donald Trump told us he was going to lock up because she's a murdering bitch. And I'll say that, and I stand by that because of what she did, number one. I don't even have to talk about it. I get so mad about Benghazi because they're not held accountable, and it all goes back to that same situation where you have the Vatican, Washington, D.C., and London City, where they have their own rules. And as far as I'm concerned, if we want to do America, we got to fix America. We go to Washington. We put another stack of block walls up all the way around it that they've already got them 7 foot high. Let's make it 14 feet high. Razor wire the top of it and lock all them sons of bitches in there because that's what they deserve because they're all criminals.
But look at my friend, Haiti. Right now, the gang leader, his name is Barbecue. He has a gold chain hanging, my gosh,
Barbecue,
I know it costs millions of dollars. He has a special ring, I think, is from one of those, groups.
What's the answer? How do we hold them accountable?
That guy eats kids.
How do we hold them accountable, Dave? Mike, how do we hold them accountable?
Well, I've said from the get-go, You got to get the military involved. We need a military because they're organized. They have the numbers. And it's not about a suppression. It's about taking back the country. If you want to take back the country, 1776 basically has got to happen again because we're going to have a war with the invasion of nothing else but the crooked politicians and the Zionists. That's a twofold problem.
Remember, it's still Canadian. They're French people. They cannot even go to supermarket, come back because they say this Mr. Barbecue will barbecue them. So, or even also American, as them. So we have so many, and the help has not been arrived yet, neither from NATO, neither from respective countries from NATO or United States. And then instead we give them 30,000 of these gangs. We don't know how many of the gangs coming to United States. Every month we give them authorization, refugees, food stamps, medical, housing, cash, everything. From where? American citizens not even get a dime of it. Go ahead, please.
They can't even take care of their own veterans, homeless veterans in this country. You know, when you listen to the government talk now, it makes me want to throw up because to think that we're in a country that these people can do the things that they're doing every single day and have the freedom that they have because people have given their lives. It is so, so evil what they're doing. And why general America, the regular population doesn't even realize what's going on. Why they just can't see that, hey, that alone, opening that border and letting people come over here to do whatever they want to do and then take advantage of the system that they're paying. What do we have to do to wake up America to make them say, stop sending all the money across the world, fix what you have here. If we can afford it when we get ourselves straightened out, absolutely, let's contribute. But Donald Trump, and I'm no fan of his either, made it very clear when we were in part of the fucking, what's it called? I wanted to call it New World Order almost, but the UN, all the other countries don't participate in what they've obliged and honored, said we're going to do it, signed up for it. They don't even meet the requirements of what they're doing, and it's minimal. But yet, every American that pays taxes and works has funded every war, criminal activity going on around the world, and other countries' people, the hell are paying politicians retirements in Ukraine. I don't know. I give up. All I can say is that Lucifer's running the show down here. He's doing a hell of a job because he's got all of us in the corner. That's all. It's beyond human. It's mind.
Go ahead, please.
I don't know what to even say how to fix it. I really don't. Can the military come in, step in and get rid of them? Because then you do that, and then everybody says
I got a question for Mike. John Doe brought it up a couple weeks ago, about you were getting a job and you had to get a microchip put in your body or you get fired. How'd you make out on that?
Okay. I know Singapore is very, very, it's called City of the New World Order. Let's put it that way. Everything, you know, basically too much AI and too much technology.
What are you talking about? Did you take a microchip? Did you take a microchip we haven't put in you?
No. We don't. We don't. We have a card. You see, once we are employed in XYZ location, you know, we have, you know, like a debit card, you know, we carry. We pass it through. The AI will see that it's me, and they open the doors, and et cetera, and you go to your workplace. But, you know, we haven't received yet there, but I think maybe in future, near future, maybe they do that. But
your job,
yet.
On your job, though. No, Mike. John Doe, are you still there? John Doe?
Hey, no, he's saying... Joe, what he's saying is he's got a card. He's got a
hang on, John Doe.
Got.
Yeah, I know, but John Doe, remember you brought up and wanted to know if Mike was still on the line? You wanted to ask him a question about something about a microchip?
Yeah. I was just referring to about 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know, Mike, at that point, I think you were in Singapore. You were coming on Bard's Logic with Robert on his show, and you were talking at that point that your company was pressuring or something to this effect. Please forgive me if I'm not remembering it correctly. But if I remember correctly, your company was pressuring you guys in order to continue your employment there in Singapore.
Do you remember that? It was the City of New World Order, but they pressured, but it would back off because people didn't like it. If nobody goes to work, but if they can do, you know? So they give us a card, you know, it's like a debit card. You're hanging it. It's like you work for IBM or you work for Microsoft or you work for any other thing. Right now, you see, nobody has microchips yet to that extent. Even in United States, which is a country of New World Order, too, and NATO, too, NATO countries or Russia or many other countries. But, you know, things will go towards that eventually. There is no question about it. But it's a matter if people accept that or not. In China, they have nobody microchipped yet. Is it? I don't think so. They have a special card. You know, we carry, but it's like similar to national ID cards that you have in every country. You carry that plus your other thing. So at the back, you know, the other one is for work. National ID card is for your identification in case, you know, police or authorities, they ask you something, you show it to them. You know, but yes, it is a as I said, Singapore is a country of New World Order too, and I said long time ago too. I mean, more countries are going towards become the countries of New World Order. But you see, everything it changes so slowly.
Yeah, we know all this already. Yeah, we know all that. Yeah, we talked about that a million times. Yeah.
At one point. You know, right now, Elon Musk, I think they put the first computer chips into one human being already in their brain. So
yeah, I know.
It's not too far away, but the question is, if
I'm not worried about that.
Or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All that's part of their plan, I know. But anyway, I was talking about the Federal Reserve when I first started the show here tonight, and that was the main thing. The main thing I wanted to bring about was that Biden and Trump they don't run anything. They don't make any decisions for anybody. They're just there to make you think that you have a choice. You don't. You know, that's what it's all about. That's the only thing that I was trying to bring up from the other night, that Biden doesn't control gas prices. Trump doesn't control gas prices. Yes, they proposed executive orders and policies that this and that, and I'm ordering that the pipeline stop construction. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that affects people. But really, generally, the bottom line is that they don't make laws, these presidents. They're not making everyday decisions for us. You know, I mean, they really aren't doing anything that's affecting me directly. Indirectly, yes, there's a lot of things, but, you know, that's mainly what I was trying to talk about in the beginning. I mean, because we had a big discussion on Saturday night, I think it was, about that, where people were saying Biden was responsible for the gas prices across the country. So, you know, skyrocketing. One of the issues, actually, one of the arguments was, I'm sick and tired of gas prices, and Biden's responsible. That was the comment that was made. And I said OPEC and these oil tycoons and other players are the ones that control, really, the market. You know, they control the price.
Yes, the reason is very clear, because Ukraine keep attacking over 10, fuel reserve in Russia. So you know, Russia is producing less oil for the market as well. So then we have to pay that in the gas pumps around the globe. You know,
I know they just discovered natural gas.
They just discovered a large deposits of natural gas off the Israeli coast ocean in that area there.
That's true. That's
and Israel's,
true. That's
yeah,
true.
And Israel, hang on. Israel's going
to
claim. Hang on. Israel's going to claim control. Hang on. Israel's going to claim control over that. And Russia supplies all of Europe with natural gas. So that's going to be a major conflict somewhere down the road. So
that's
now go ahead.
That's one of the small distractions. Because the bigger problem is in Antarctica. They don't let you hear about that. Trust me. What's going on in Antarctica below the 60th parallel? Bet your ass every country in the world's involved in it. You're not allowed to know about it.
What are they doing? Dave, what are they doing?
Oh my God, all the minerals and everything's down. It's an untouched area. The Nazis went down there
absolutely.
In the 30s, you know, and honestly – made claim to a bunch of it, but the thing is, you're talking, man, oh, man, there's a whole other thing going on down there that this
wow.
It could be what's even coming because it's – you got to think about it. You look at maps today and they show it all frozen, you know. There's maps that only go back, I think it was the 1700s I was watching, and they have an outline and a maps drawn, hand-drawn by these sailors and travelers. That show that is like a jungle, an outline, a depict. I mean, it's unbelievable. But, you know, we're not allowed to know about that. That's where all the elites are running to, I bet.
Absolutely. In Israel, the reason is Gaza has been now taken over because it has a lot of good things. As you said, the gas is number one. Oil also.
Yep.
There is enough oil there, too, in Gaza. And there are so many minerals, et cetera, as well, too. So for that reason, also, the Gaza will be finished, and they will be used, Samsung option, if it's necessary, in coming months. But today, NATO was exercising with 100,000 troops near Russia. And Russia, since Putin re-elected, Putin totally changed his tone again. You know, before election was very calm. Now he says, if you put one goddamn troops inside Ukraine, we are going to start World War III. So kind of Israel is not fearing right now as well, too, because what Putin said. So, you see, we have a lot of things going on at the same time. You know, Russia, Ukraine, Persian Gulf, Iran, Ayatollahs.
Isn't Israel about to build another canal? Or they're planning on doing it? Anybody heard about that where...
I know they made a new road from Gaza to, I guess, Tel Aviv, but, I mean, to Tel Aviv,
this would be the
yeah.
opposite of the Suez. They're not going to fool the Suez anymore, which would make where they're going to build this one at the where Israel has control. Israel would be basically like the middle of an airport, and they're in control of everything coming and going. Is what they're looking at, how that's going to work out now that they got Gaza at war once they level it, do whatever else they're doing. But that other canal coming in is going to be more direct through them, and they have more control of what the goods of going through the Middle East is basically what's going to happen.
Absolutely. Iran also, Ayatollahs, they have threatened Israel with the second October 7th massacre. And so these things will cause a massive chances for World War III, but World War III starts from Iran. I mean, there it goes, and then all over the world goes too. China is now sending, again, planes into the Taiwan and massive training with the live ammunition near Taiwan. So the whole thing is like a domino effect. Once one goes, everything else will go too. So right now we are in that stage of the game right now. So it's very hard, but, you know, we hope nothing happens. But there is a big chance more events coming, especially April 8th, the eclipse of the sun, and a second eclipse of the sun is coming, which is goes through Texas cities. One of them is Nineveh, and then goes keep going to intercept the other, eclipse we had in 2017. It came from Portland, Oregon, Salem, Oregon, and Salem, Idaho, and so on. So they, everybody are talking from massive floods, massive earthquakes, massive, already earthquakes are picking up in the world, 5.0, 6.0. You keep watching, monitor the earthquake activity around the globe, you will feel that there is something is going to come, and either mankind will kill all the wars, or all the wars will kill humanity. Go ahead, please. Go ahead, Joe or John, please.
Well, I gotta say one thing. Just want to say one thing. Is Sarge still out there? I don't know if he's still out there or not. I don't know who's on the line right now for an overtime right now.
Yeah,
I'm
still here,
with you.
I'm listening.
Oh, okay.
I'm listening avidly. Yes, sir. I'm here.
Yes, Sarge. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, my brother Mike. How you doing?
Pretty good, sir. If you're good, I'm good. If you're not good, I'm not good either. Go ahead, sir.
Say that again.
He said, if you're good, he's good. If he's not good, he's not good.
Oh, outstanding, outstanding. It's not like mutual goodness, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, it's nice to have you all the time.
But, you guys have been speaking of a compendium of problems tonight, and I'm not trying to deny any of that because it's all there. But, man, there's so many. Look, I think we can agree on one thing, though. I hope we can agree on, no matter what the deficiencies of Donald Trump may or may not be, and the evilness of, the Biden administration may or may not be, we cannot allow another 4 years of it, no matter what. No matter what. We can't have another 4 years of this. A deliberate destruction of the Constitution of the United States by design. We got to stop. We've got no hope of getting rid of the Federal Reserve if these guys keep doing what they're doing at the rate they're doing it. They're just going so fast with it. The only way to undo it will be with bloodshed. So we can't let them get another 4 years, no matter what. And for me, that short-term goal is paramount. I've never seen an administration this hideous. They're literally wrecking the very thing that defends this country, the armed forces of the United States. They're wrecking it. Hell, the militias ain't ready to take up the slot yet. So we can't let another 4 years of this government continue, man. We'll be, I shudder to think. They are codifying the destruction of the United States in law.
I don't know. I think we could survive another 4 years. I just think it would be really bad.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. Not with this unbridled rate of illegal immigration. No way.
You get another Republican president.
No way. I don't believe that's even possible. Another 10, 15 million in another 4 years? It'll probably be more than that. They'll have electoral power from now until the end of time, or till the end of the United States.
We may not have elections, too. If we don't have elections, then everything would be...
They'll have elections because they'll be able to rig them all. They'll be able to rig every election with the electoral numbers they got, at least as far as national elections go. And a national election, of course, is the presidency. When you get enough electoral votes in New York and California by expanding the population with illegal aliens and then counting them in the census, you got enough electoral votes right there. Just getting them two states to almost wrap up the election.
Yeah.
That's their goal. They don't need to get, but Mike, they don't need to get rid of elections. They'll have control of them in perpetuity. Because they got the two big six, they keep adding the numbers to them. And the numbers are going to give them electoral power.
For American citizens to get a driver's license, they need your fingerprint. They need a thousand, massive, multiple, you know, identification from you guys and your other information, in order to get one a fucking driver's license in the United States. But then illegal aliens, they come, and then they grant them without any other information, without any other thing. They give them the driver's license, and then they're able to vote.
See, that's a diabolical thing about it. Yeah, but them being able to vote would be an added bonus. That's true if they can vote, because they're pretty sure they can bank on their vote being Democrat. But they don't really need it. All they need is to have them counted. When they have them counted, they get more congressmen in the House of Representatives. More congressmen in the House of Representatives mean more electoral votes. Getting up 5, 6, 7, 8 congressmen by flooding the country with illegal aliens that get counted in the census, that's all they really need. They don't really need them to vote.
Absolutely.
That's what's so damn diabolical about what they're doing.
Yeah. It is diabolical. You're right. And there's no reasoning with them. There's no deals with the devil. But, again, I made a New Year's resolution. Not one more patriot left behind. You know, if all of us take up a battle, spiritually or whatever have you, whatever way, to stand up for the patriots in our country, we can make a difference.
We have to. We have to. I mean, election integrity, and I mean, I got short-term goals. I like that election integrity, getting rid of the administration one way or another, getting rid of the administration, and, you know, and election integrity. Because like you say, like you talk about with the Federal Reserve and all that, short of a revolution or a constitutional convention, which admittedly is a long way off, the only way to get rid of these things that relate to the Federal Reserve is to have the laws repealed. You've got to have the right legislature and they're willing to cast the vote to repeal them. If you don't have them, it won't get repealed.
That's that right.
You see, in British-owned Canada, Australia, and many other countries, and if we take the bait, that's what I'm saying, if we take the bait, okay, we do whatever you guys are saying, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, for example, then the things will get harder on us, and British people will own us, and they may even change whole system of election in this country and bring North American Union, Mexico, Canada, and United States annex it together as one country. I mean, so there is a lot of things, I mean, is possibilities right now. But the question is, if people take the bait, you know, if you like a mouse, you know, you put the cheese, and then you put the cheese, you bring it down, mouse comes, and then you put the trap on it. That's it. If British Empire, they succeed on that, then we are gone as a nation. I'm telling you guys. It would be end of USA. End of 1776, because they want us to take the bait, and if we don't take the bait, we can, you know, through other means, peaceful means, we can bring the change. That would be much greater than if we want to bring change to United States through other non-peaceful means. And so if we bring it non-peaceful, that means we took the bait of the British Empire and the New World Order, and they are happy. They will be so happy, and the country will be maybe go back to 51 countries like ex-Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia become so many countries, Czechoslovakia become Czech and Slovakia, and et cetera. We may become 51 countries. I mean, that's not that good for us. So we have to think, realize something much better than, you know, saying war, bloodshed, and et cetera. We must talk peacefully like Gandhi. You see, Gandhi took the ass of the British Empire, put them in outside the India, and they got their independence like 56 years ago, around that time. So, you know, so there are many other ways we can, you know, fight. But if we do correct way, then it's better for all of us. But if we don't, if we say, okay, Biden wins, oh, that's end of the world, end of the United States, it will be end of United States. Or, you know, or vice versa. If Donald Trump won and then the other ones keep saying, oh, he won and blah, 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 they take the bait. So either party, if they take the bait, then New World Order will be happy and smiling at all of us. But if we try like Gandhi, we can kick ass of anybody we want, even British. Or how much more they can come kill? I mean, India, I mean, Gandhi, they went in front of British troops, and they keep killing them, the first wave, second wave, third wave, fourth wave. Because how much bullets do they have? Then people go and kill all of their those troops that they killed Indians. You see what I'm saying? So yeah. We have good means or bad means. But to me...
All right, guys, listen. We got to do closing thoughts here. Time has flown by. We're already on 3 hours. So closing thoughts, because they're going to cut me off here in 7 minutes, or about 10 minutes, actually. So just go right down the line. You guys take turns, whatever. We'll start with you, Tave. Are you still there, Tave? I know you got a lot to say usually. Tave, you still there? Maybe not. Nope, maybe not. Well, they cut us off already? You still there? Guys, you can still hear me?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I still hear you. You're still on.
All right. Oh, okay, closing thoughts, guys. Tonight's podcast show, anybody? I don't think I can see my chat room anymore. I mean, we've been on close to 3 hours, so. I guess
well,
you go first, Sarge.
I'll tell you, Joe. Look here, Joe. I'm prepared for a, not really prepared, but let me find the right word here. I will have to acquiesce to a Joe Biden victory. If Joe Biden gets the election, he gets the election. We already know they're not going to review it. You're not going to go back and review anything. You're just going to accept the results, and there won't be any question about it. So I'm prepared to do what we got to do if and when he wins. But I say this, let's not make the job any harder than it has to be, for God's sake. Let's not let him get back in there. It'll be hard enough, even if he loses. We still got a tall mountain to climb, whether it's Trump or anybody else in the White House. But with Biden in there, the problem is compounded 100-fold.
Okay, yeah, agreed. Mike, you want to say something?
Yeah, just I was continuing with what pretty much I was saying. We have always to learn from Gandhi, because there is always a chance at peacefulness. Peacefulness is the only way that Americans can win. But I mean, there are, I don't deny Sarge's way as well too. But you know, my way is Gandhi way more. But if Gandhi way doesn't answer, then maybe we can go to different. Higher and higher, but first we have to try Gandhi way to kick the ass of British and New World Order out of United States. Go ahead.
The Gandhi way. What's the Gandhi way? Educate me here.
Yeah, Gandhi. You know, Gandhi did not use any arms. He did not use any kind of weapon. They kicked the ass of British Empire and sent them back to London, Queen of London, and then their country was freed, and they got their independence back, and now is a country with over 300 atom bombs. So, you know, so it's become one of the strong country, and they have over 1.2 billion, and it was very close to China. China has a 1.4 billion people right now, you know. And as you know, in China, it's one child per family. They're allowed to have. They are not allowed to have multiple children.
Yeah, I wonder how many nuclear bombs it would take to level China and wipe off the entire population. Imagine that. The catastrophic death that would be, huh? Insane, huh? All right. Well, everybody's still on the phone line here that I can see. Anybody got something they want to add here at the end? Jump in now, please. Jump in now, because I'm going to get ready to wrap it up here. Get ready to play. Well, Sarge, what do you want me to play tonight? Ronald Reagan again, or what? What do you want me to play? I got to get some new intros.
What you got? What you got? You got any Calvin Coolidge, Divine Exchange?
I played a new one in the beginning. All right, here we go. I'll play this one. You guys have never heard this one, I don't think. Here we go. Well, I think here we go. Come on.
Well, I have a number of people from whom I get policy. I'm talking to Frank Gaffney. I talked to Richard Haass.
Richard Haass served under Colin Powell during this Bush administration over at the State Department. He's now the president of the Council on Foreign Relations.
The idea of a one-world community, a new world order. You know, they see that
as... They see themselves as a government as opposed to a group of world leaders or people with influence at a global level who are talking about global issues, do they?
They see themselves as headhunters. They'll get an up-and-coming politician who they think may be president or prime minister one day, and as globalist, industrialist leaders who believe that politics shouldn't be in the hands of the politicians.
People talk to me about, you know, the issue of Republican versus Democrat as if they don't get it. And I say, look, here's the way you get it. It's organized crime. All you do is you call the Republicans the Genoveses and you call the Democrats the Gambinos. The people at the top, they treat it like a crap game, like it's their crap game, like they're making lots of money. Occasionally, somebody at the table shoots each other, but the moment anything threatens their crap game, they all unite to protect it. They're both controlled by the same financial, economic, and corporate interests.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order.
It used to be more secretive. You know, the New World Order was talked about 30 or 40 years ago, and nobody would say it out and open. Now they talk about the New World Order. Or they just think the world would be better off if we had one world government.
Right.
I don't. I mean, I don't even like the size of our federal government, let alone one world government.
It's a need for a new world order.
Within the next 4 years, we will see the emergence of a new international
order. The beginning. Of a new international order.
But there's a very, very clear-cut and easily identifiable system in place that puts all of these elements from media control to government control to energy control together into one apparatus working together effectively towards its final goal, which is, you know, global control.
A new world is emerging. It is a new world order.
It's a phrase that I often use myself, that we needed a new world order.
There is a chance for the President of the United States to use this disaster to carry out what his father, a phrase his father used, and that is a new world order.
They're inside a cabal, a conspiracy, if you will, to take control of the United States, lead us into a one world government run by them.
Americans have been taught to expect their salvation from government, instead of recognizing government as the most dangerous threat they'll face in their lives.
You're watching The Madness of a Lost Society. November 26, 2010. Black Friday revealed yet further evidence of the complete madness of the populace of our lost society.
In case you didn't hear, the leaders of China and Russia.
China and Russia said that they are renouncing the dollar.
The best way to think of it is a ticking time bomb. At some stage, the dollar will fall sharply.
Now, you might be saying, Neil, what the heck does this mean to me?
As the dollar loses status as the world's reserve currency, as mystery missiles launch just off our shores, as North and South Korea take the world to the brink of war, as the TSA violates all measure of liberty and constitutional rights, and as the U.S. military itself prepares for the coming total economic collapse and breakdown of civil order, this is what Americans care about. Wanton, lustful commercialism, acting like animals fighting over trinkets made by human beings for slave wages. As you watch this horrific video, do you think any of these people own a single ounce of physical precious metal? Any gold? Any silver? Do you think that even one of them understands what the Federal Reserve is, or that the Fed is spending them into oblivion and economic slavery? Do you think even one among them has made any preparations at all for the day when there is no food on grocery store shelves? And do you think the morally bankrupt executives at Target or Walmart even care? This is what we've become. A decadent, mindless culture who, by virtue of this complete and willful ignorance, are now officially complicit in the crimes being perpetrated against us. Do you think these people who behave like animals, literally trampling each other over $198 laptops and $10 toasters, will even pause for a moment to consider their actions before they riot and burn entire cities when the days of hyperinflation finally arrive? When the grocery stores are bare? When they are truly desperate? This, my friends, is what a dumbed-down, morally bankrupt, completely broken society looks like, and this is how it behaves. No outrage over the bankers raping them. No outrage over their gutted industry. No outrage over their plundered dollar. Just blind, wanton stupidity. Just bread and searchlights. The elite are social Darwinists, and they believe what they can get away with is fair game as long as we allow it. This is social engineering, and they've done it to us by design. They've turned us into animals that they can corral. We are no longer citizens in a republic safeguarded by our elected representatives. We are consumers feeding at a corporate trough managed by officials.
Will you tell the American people to whom you lent $2.2 trillion of their dollars?
Hundreds and hundreds of banks, any bank or that has access to the U.S. Federal Reserve System.
Tell us who they are.
No.
If this is America, who will stop them? Our entire system is corrupt and needs to be dismantled and begun anew. But from what base? If what happened on Friday across America is any indication of the condition of the American populace, then our very foundations are built of sand. May God forgive us for what we've become and for what we've allowed to happen to our nation. And may those of us with the courage and sense to do it renounce this behavior and the monstrous marketing ploy that is Black Friday in its entirety. This, my friends, is not us. We are the Republic. We are the informed. We are the proactive ones. And it is our job to lift up those who are lost. And saving our republic is a full-time job. May God bless the republic.
We are the republic. We are. I love it. All right. God bless the republic. Take care.